Place to Be Nation, welcome to this week's Place to Be podcast classic episode. Of course, I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero. With me, as always, my PIC, Scott Griscolo. And Scott, of course, WrestleMania, just about 10 days away at this point. And The next couple of classic episodes, we want to take you to WrestleMania topics from years gone by, don't we?
We do. So on this evening, JR, we're going to go back to March 28th, 2013, which was about a week before WrestleMania 29, which you and I were at. And it was actually, of course, the big weekend that brought us to where we are right now. So we did an old school WrestleMania roundtable. So it was you, me, Jeremy Nichols, Jason Greenhouse, Jordan Duncan, and Chad Campbell. And we talked about a myriad of Mania topics up and down the line.
Yeah, it was a great episode, a lot of fun diving through the first 28 years of WrestleMania. Of course, it's going to sound a little funny because there's been so much that's happened since. But
yeah, I know, really.
It was a great episode. It was a popular episode, and we wanted to get you in the WrestleMania mindset, get some excitement around WrestleMania coming up in 10 days. So check this one out, and otherwise, be sure to check out PlayStation.com each and every day. Of course, last week was our great Beyond the Mat retrospective, pay tribute to the great Dennis Stamp. This Monday on the Place to Be podcast episode, we'll be talking wrestling classics, Scott, and then we'll be back with another classic episode. A lot of classics getting thrown around the Place to Be podcast, wrestling classic. So anyway, a lot of classic episodes, a wrestling classic Monday, and otherwise we'll talk to you next week and enjoy the episode. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your recovering co-host, Justin Rosero, still alive, haven't died yet, thankfully. But so the man who's already been dead inside for many, many years, that is my PAC, Scott Griscolo. Scott, how are you doing?
Well, you know, I'll be excited when you get the not Justin R, okay?
I don't want it. I don't think you could live up to the...
about being dead or not, but JR, it's always a pleasure. Sound like Big Billy Busick after one too many Swisher Sweets, but that's okay.
I don't think I could live up to the non-Scott C, I know that.
To episode 210 of the Place to Be podcast, and what a special show we have for all of you on this fine evening. We of course are a mere 10 days away, and 9 days away
from getting there.
The biggest weekend in PTB history. That is of course this weekend in the Garden State Party, as we're calling it. And that is of course WrestleMania weekend, and we're continuing our theme.
It's going to be WrestleMania weekend by the time we get to this introduction.
Of WrestleMania theme shows. And we're going to just kind of talk about history tonight, JR. And we're going to bring in, we're going to have a big show with a lot of star-studded guests. But we couldn't find any, so we're stuck with these guys. Why don't you bring them in?
That was like a bad roast joke. That was awful.
I don't care, whatever.
It was like right off your Dean Martin roast tape. All right.
Guests.
4 inches of mediocrity. That's what you are here. Life hashtag.
Whatever. Hey, go to the guests. My God.
All right. Well, we were supposed to have one guest, but he bailed on us this afternoon, and that is Mr. Graham Cawthon. So hopefully he's got some kind of crazy breaking news story to make it worth it. But we will have him back again soon someday. So let's hit the guys that are here, and we'll start with the most tenured member of the PTB Nation as far as appearances go, the one and only mayor of the Midwest, Mr. Jeremy Nichols.
Well, thanks for having me back, guys. You know, this podcast deserves a better kind of guest, and I'm going to give it to him.
That sounds like right out of the LaRue joke book right there, so you might want to pick things up as we move along.
I borrowed it from Sugar Tits' mom.
All right, let's bring in the next guy here. We heard him a couple weeks ago when we were doing the Half-Baked Ideas. We'll hopefully have him back on next week to do it again. That is the one and only Jordan Duncan.
Hello, guys. As you know, I'm a religious man, so I hope that you would join me in praying for X-Pac's butthole.
Yes. Prayers have gone out from the PTB Nation. From one group of asses to another. So, all right, let's bring in now my boy, my fellow Yankee fan, getting maybe revved up for the season. We'll see. Maybe we'll hit another game together this year. And that is the one and only Mr. Jason Greenhouse. Jason.
Hey, guys, glad to be here. I'm also a proud follower of Not Scott C on Twitter.
I think everyone is at this point, and if you're not, you should be.
All right. And let's round up this rowdy crew by bringing in one of our newer members of the nation, but getting pretty tenured pretty quickly here, and that is the one and only Chad Soup Campbell. Chad, welcome.
Hey, guys. I'm excited to discuss some WrestleMania memories tonight.
Now, you've all been on before, so I don't think you need any further introductions, and I think everyone's heard. I think you've all had pretty memorable appearances. We had Jeremy Nichols for Survivor Series 90, Jason Greenhouse, Survivor Series 96. We had Mr. Duncan for Beyond the Mat, and of course Chad for the big January 4th, 99 Monday Night Wars episode. So you're all pretty tenured, you're all pretty experienced. So what we're going to do here is we're going to do a little old school WrestleMania roundtable. We have six topics we're going to hit. And we're going to, I'm sure, get into many tangents. We're just going to kind of shoot the shit on this. We're going to do a little rap session, and we'll see what we'll come up with. So I'm going to kick off the first question. We'll start with Scott, and then from there, everyone just chime in. And that is, what was your first WrestleMania as a fan?
Well, the first WrestleMania I saw live was WrestleMania 2, which I saw on closed circuit at the New Haven Coliseum with my dad. WrestleMania 1, I remember renting like 3 weeks or maybe a month after it came out. But the first live one I saw was WrestleMania 2. And from then on, I've seen almost every one of them live. I think I went through a stretch in the 90s where I missed a couple. I remember not – I think 9 and 10 were probably the only Manias that I have not seen live. 10 and 11. I did see WrestleMania – well, most of WrestleMania 9. That was a memorable moment because our man Dr. G and I were watching it, and the power went out – or the cable went out right as Fuji was throwing the salt in Brett's face, and the cable went out. So when my buddy told me that Hogan had won the title, I didn't know what the hell he was. I thought he was pulling my leg. I had no idea what he was talking about. But WrestleMania 2 on closed circuit was my first WrestleMania, and from that point on, the memories just the shows have gotten a lot better, and the memories have as well. Guys, what were your first memories?
The first memory I have is. Seen the highlights from WrestleMania 2 on Championship Wrestling every week. They just always show a highlight of the end of the Battle Royal, where Andre had Bret up right before he threw him on top of the anvil. I remember watching WrestleMania 3 on VHS. A friend of my father's gave us a copy about a week after that. And then WrestleMania 4, I actually ordered on pay-per-view, and I had friends over, and their parents were upstairs with my parents and stuff. But I remember like it was yesterday, watching the tournament, being very happy Randy Savage won the world title. And immediately after it was over, I was taping it. I watched it again on the VHS tape.
How about you, Jeremy?
I got into it in 92. So my first one, it was just before WrestleMania 8. So that's the first one that I remember seeing. And I didn't see it live. I watched the video of it just before SummerSlam that year I saw live. But I remember what I remember most about WrestleMania 8 was the magazine had all the pictures of Flair and Elizabeth, you know?
Yes.
And It like there was that one issue that showed like how Flair did it. Like they showed like that for some reason it's Flair and Liz, but yet he's got like WrestleMania 4 on VHS in the corner and actually pointed it out. And they're like, why would Flair keep all of Savage's you know, WrestleMania moments. He's got 4 and 5 down there on the shelf and everything. And I was like that. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's how they did that. But that's what I remember the most about WrestleMania. And my first one was 8. Cause like I said, unfortunately, unlike you guys, I didn't come into it early enough to be like a part of the Hogan era and stuff. So, I mean, that might be a good thing that I came into it after Hogan. But,
well, especially yeah. those last couple months and years.
Ooh, yeah.
Who we got left out there? We have Chad.
Yeah, much like Jeremy, the first WrestleMania I actually kind of remember live is WrestleMania 8 for me as well. What we had a family friend that had a satellite dish that would tape the pay-per-views for me. I actually need to ask my parents because I don't know who paid for these things, but we would go over to his house and he'd have a tape, so I'd watch it usually the next morning. But I loved WrestleMania 8. I was really invested into Savage versus Flair. That was kind of the first storyline I can really remember as a kid outside of Hulk Hogan versus Earthquake that I was really into. So WrestleMania 8 always has fond memories for me as well.
Jordan?
Mine is no different than Scott or Jason's. WrestleMania 2 was my first one. I think I talked about this way back, maybe the first time I was on the show. I watched the VHS copy of WrestleMania 2 probably 100 times in my life, and I still consider it the worst WrestleMania of all time. So, the first WrestleMania I watched live, though, we had it on tape, and I think I fell asleep at 2 or something, but the first one I remember staying up for the whole time was WrestleMania 6 when Warrior beat Hogan. And just like Chad, we had a friend who my dad worked with that taped all the pay-per-views for us, so I don't think we ordered a pay-per-view probably until like 1993 or 1994. So.
Of course, mine, I started watching wrestling late 89, early 90, so 6 was really the first show I was kind of aware of. But I didn't see one live until 8. 7 I saw shortly after. I think 7 was on like Palm Sunday. I think we talked about this. We had like people over for dinner, so I wasn't able to go watch it. But 8 was the first one I watched live, my cousin Matt's. What?
5 guys, and we have 2 combined answers. 8 or 2.
Right? I know. I was going to say, well, we can't even vote on who had it best. If you could pick one to have been, I mean, I guess that's kind of a stupid question, right? I think most probably pick, what, 3? If you could pick one to have been the first one you saw live?
Yeah, probably 3.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt for me.
I'd probably go 5. I love 5.
If you're a Savage fan, I would have banged my head against a wall. probably in that main event. I was banging my head against a wall at home watching it. But
let me ask you this, because our buddy Ben Morse, who listens to us, was calling me out on Twitter today because he was listening to the WrestleMania Listomania. And he couldn't believe that I left Hogan and Cena off my all-time performers list. And I don't remember the actual list. I think it was, what do we pick, like top 5 or 10? And I found a way that I just didn't think they made the cut. Where do you guys stand on that? Do you think Hogan is a top 10 WrestleMania match performer?
No, I think that he had 1 or 2 good matches. I mean, obviously, him and Andre is epic. Him and Warrior, I think, is probably his best performance.
I think I'd put Hogan in the top 10. Cena really kind of seems like a underrated choice in some regards, because I do really like his match with Shawn. I thought his match with Triple H was really good, but he's kind of tapered off the past couple of years, having some disappointing matches. But Hogan for sure, just based on the magnitude, and he really did have some of his better matches of the year in his WrestleMania matches.
Yeah, I mean, you figure, obviously the Andre match wasn't really a great match, but just the spectacle of it. But then you got, I mean, 5, 6, and 7 all in a row, Savage and Warrior, and even the Slaughter match was pretty good. So that's 3 years in a row where I thought he had a real good match. Obviously, none of them ended up being the best match. Well, I guess the Savage match might have been the best match on the show, but, you know. And then, of course, he comes back, the match with Rock, too. What was that, 12 years later, 13 years later?
Yeah, to me, that's the best argument if you're trying to say, you know, they should be. Oh, I'm sorry, I just read the latest Not Scott C. I gotta not read these during the show. God. Yeah, I think that's your best case for him, because I think if you just count his initial run, I don't know if he makes it. I mean, those are really big matches, but I think you can find guys that had better long-term WrestleMania careers. But when you factor in that match with The Rock, and then even the one with Vince at 19, maybe it's a little bit tougher to keep him off. So maybe that.
I'd put Hogan in the top 10 and Cena not, because, and everyone knows I hate Cena, but when you look at Hogan's matches, they're all very different, and they're all with very different people. You know, Savage, Bundy, Andre. When you look at Cena's, it's kind of all the same. Mm. You know, it's like Layfield, HBK, Triple H. It's like, it's all kind of the same match over and over again, whereas Hogan, like, 1 year he's wrestling Andre, the next he's wrestling, you know, Mach, and then he's got Warrior, and come on. He did get a good match out of the Ultimate Warrior, and I think that deserves a lot of credit. You know, I mean, I'm not a big Hogan fan, but come on, you know, it's not the easiest job in the world to do.
Well, we're going to get to the overall best performer. That's going to be our last category. So let's move on to this one, because I think this is an interesting one, and I'm going to start with Jordan. So biggest missed opportunity at a WrestleMania, either a blown angle that didn't happen, a match that should have, something that should have been better that wasn't, just the biggest missed opportunity in Mania history.
All right, well, I got a couple, and then one just popped in my head, actually. First one I thought of would be WrestleMania 8. They had Hogan, they had Flair on the card at the same time, and just the thought of Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair at WrestleMania in 1992, I mean, what ended up happening, you know, Flair and Savage ended up being great. But I think if you have a chance to have Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair at WrestleMania and you don't do it, that's got to be pretty high on the list, you know?
Yeah, that one I feel like is such – it tears at me, because I agree with you, you have to have it. But the thought of losing Savage Flair to me is
exactly.
Like gut-wrenching.
Yeah, because you know that wouldn't have been as good as what we got, but...
Well, let's quickly go in a circle. What would you guys have preferred? Do you think it would have been worth having Hogan Flair to lose that Savage Flair match? Just quickly around the circle.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so, because you could have just put Savage Flair at SummerSlam and then moved everything up. That Hogan Flair match could have been epic. I don't know why, for the love of God, and I still don't understand this, why they had to put the two of them in the house show circuit. That was stupid. I never understood that. Why waste those matches on all these house shows and then realize, well, they kind of suck at the ring together.
Yeah, the house show business, that was still their main business at that point.
Right, but if you're looking to do a huge WrestleMania angle in front of 60-something thousand people at the Hoosier Dome, I think you still could have made house show money without them. You could have put them on the card. They didn't have to wrestle each other.
Just put them in tag matches against each other.
Yeah, I don't think you had to put them against each other.
Yeah, but once they touch, isn't that the lure of it?
Well, you could have danced around them for a while. I mean, fans were showing up at house shows anyway.
Not really at that time. I don't think so. Because that was the whole thing, that they were disappointing. The gates were disappointing. I mean, I think it's a valid point. I see what you're saying. Totally. I think they could have still done the house show run, gotten their money early, and then still paid it off at Mania. And I think that was their plan. I think they just were kind of shell-shocked by how bad that turnout was. Chad, what do you think? Would you have traded that match for Hogan Flair?
Yeah, I mean, this is something... this was one I also thought of, Jordan, and with my other one that may be mentioned by someone else, or I'll mention it. I think what ended up happening as far as a plan B turned out really well, but I would have done Hogan and Flair and pretty much kind of, I think, copied the template that they used at the Bash at the Beach 1994 match. I mean, I thought that was a really good match. Made Flair look strong. Hogan looked strong, kind of coming into the WCW at the time, but I would have had Flair kind of win the championship through some means, maybe through The Undertaker or something, in the fall of 1991, and really build up to the Hogan versus Flair match and have that be the first singles match between them at WrestleMania.
Anyone else thoughts on that particular one?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Flair and Hogan should have happened. I mean, I agree with everything Scotty said. You know, you move everything up and just, you know, the house show thing. Weren't they running house shows in San Francisco at the time? And, I mean, they're putting Flair and Hogan out in the ring in California when that's not really their backyard anyway.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
No wonder why attendance was down, you know?
I agree with you on that 100%, Jeremy. That's like the big house show that everybody uses as an example. Oh, my God, they didn't sell out the Cow Palace. Who gives a shit? They probably never sold out the Cow Palace.
Did they fight? I thought they fought in MSG, didn't they?
At the end,
December.
Their first one was at the Cow Palace. Yeah, they fought at MSG like December 29th, I think.
Yeah, or 30th, something like that. Yeah, by then they had already decided that the thing sucked, but instead they had their first two matches, I think, were the Cow Palace in San Francisco, and I don't know, the Portland Civic Arena, wherever the Blazers played at the time. I think to myself, what the hell are you doing it over there for? I mean, you know, because they wanted to maybe avoid having it at a big venue or something. I don't know. I just didn't understand the whole thing. I didn't get it. I didn't get the whole philosophy of what they were trying to pull off.
I think they probably just got antsy. They said, we got Hogan Flair. Let's hit the house shows, try and turn the business around, and then we'll still have it hot for Mania. And then, yeah, I'm surprised they didn't maybe keep, the Piper Flair thing going a little bit longer on the houses. But it's definitely an interesting one. I don't think I can trade that Savage Flair match. I mean, that was literally like one of my favorite matches of all time, and the build was so well done and so good that I don't think any Hogan Flair match, as much as I like that Bash of the Beach one that Chad mentioned, I don't think any Hogan Flair match could have topped what we ended up getting out of Savage Flair.
But we also wouldn't have had to see Hogan versus Sid, though.
Yeah, but to me that's a necessary evil to get to the awesome Savage Flair match.
I did have one more, and I don't know if this counts as a missed moment or anything like that, but when Brock missed the Shooting Star Press and dropped right on his dome, that was the big deal going into Mania, was this huge monster could do a Shooting Star Press. That would have been such an awesome end to WrestleMania 19, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if you count that. It's just, I always wonder if he would have hit it, if he would have used it more often or what.
I think it's a good missed opportunity choice, because I think it's one that in retrospect, I've seen more than one person kind of say that match that took them out of that match. It kind of ruined it for them.
Yeah,
I think it's a good one.
I agree with that too. The big thing with Brock back then too was that he can do a shooting star press in OVW, and he has to do it in a WWE ring on TV at least. I don't know if he did it at house shows or whatever, but for him to do it at Mania on that stage and end a pay-per-view like that would have been awesome. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys think it was worth, I mean, I think what, this is what Greeny's kind of saying, do you guys think it was worth the risk? I mean, knowing you're going to be tired, exhausted at the end of this match, Angle's far away from the ring, I mean, do you think the payoff was worth, obviously what we saw was near death, so was yeah. was the risk high enough to take the shot?
Well, absolutely. He, you know, Lesnar couldn't have known he was going to be gone in a year. And how many times do you get the main event match at WrestleMania and all, you know, all of the years you see all those kind of highlights?
Yeah.
Your chance to get in the highlight reel and the main event on the biggest stage, definitely worth it. Because he didn't know he was going to be gone in a year anyway. So he probably figured, I'll be here another 10 years. But fuck it. Let's go for it. You know, it sucks he missed, but hell yeah. I mean, it would have been worth it had it, you know, paid off. Mm.
I'm curious to see if the match would have ended with that.
Obviously yeah, definitely.
Not. Oh yeah,
it would have.
So they obviously had to. So they obviously.
Yeah, I think so.
Well then, kudos to both him and Kurt for finding a good way to improvise at least at the end.
I'll say Kurt because I think Brock was out on his feet. I don't.
Oh, yeah, Brock was toast. True. I'm surprised he had enough wherewithal to actually hit that last F5 to actually win the match.
I think he was so dazed at that point too before the shooting star press. That when he put his hand on the turnbuckle, because his hand was all sweaty, and that he slipped on the turnbuckle doing the shooting star press, I think that he should have thought a little bit more into it. But once again, he was so dazed that he probably didn't even realize that he put his hand on the buckle
right.
to make it sweaty. Mm.
Yeah, and I think Angle being so far across the ring didn't help things either. I remember at the time I was watching it, I think, Scott, I didn't know you yet, so I think it was me and Mark Claire watching it. And we were like, we saw Angle all the way across the ring, and we're just like, what's going on? why would he even do this going that far away?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one. So it's, since Greeny, since you just went last on this one, what do you think? Do you have any choices for biggest disappointment or missed moment?
Actually, on my list that I have Hogan and Flair, and I have Brock and Angle with the ending being different, with him actually hitting the shooting star press.
Okay. How about Nichols?
I've got. And this is going to sound odd, but HBK and Rock at WrestleMania 20, like, I know that there wasn't, like, a plan to do that match,
mm-hmm.
but when I look back, like, the triple threat that we got was good, but it was the last year Rock was there, and he was still in good shape, good ring shape. HBK had finally gotten his ring shape back in, you know, all that rust was gone. How great would it have been to see those two in Madison Square Garden, you know, just one-on-one, and then the guy whose name we won't mention wins the title one-on-one on his own, you know, with no triple threat crap or anything like that. And we get a good HBK and Rock match. Like, that would have been, to me, that would have been great.
And yeah, you can mention his name here. That's fine. I don't know if you're being facetious or not. But we, and you know what else that takes you to? Maybe, I mean, could you have done Mick Foley and Orton in that hardcore match at Mania? I mean, think of how much better that makes Mania 20. If you add that hardcore match, you had Rock versus Shawn, and then you do Benoit, Triple H in a singles match. You guys all agree that's a better card?
Mm.
Definitely.
With Eddie and Angle? Oh, fuck. Yeah. That would have been great.
And the return of Taker. I mean, regardless of the fact that Taker-Kane match was moderately terrible, him coming out, I mean, JR, you and I were there. Greeny, I think you were there. Were you at that show, too?
No, I wasn't at WrestleMania.
You weren't at 20. Okay, you weren't at 20. Yeah, I mean, that moment was tremendous to begin with. Yes, the match was unbelievably bad, but let me throw this out here. You just mentioned, I think it was you, Greeny, I think, about Slaughter, might have been you, Chad, about Slaughter and Hogan at 7. What about if they went with the original plan of a Hogan Warrior sequel? Now, is this the same thing as the following year, and then we lose out on Hogan on Warrior Savage, which ended up being an incredible
right.
match?
Yeah.
That's a problem with some of these what-ifs, is that you end up screwing yourself in the end. Because you don't know if what do you guys think? I mean, you don't know if Hogan and Warrior would have put on as good a match as they did at 6.
I think Hogan and Warrior would have been a great rematch, but with Savage and Warrior at 7 being my favorite Mania match and favorite Mania moment of all time, I wouldn't have changed it.
Same here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think And I do think some of the luster with Hogan and Warrior would kind of have been worn off.
Yes.
For the rematch. I mean, as good as that match at six was crafted, I do think a lot of that, the reason it's carried is one, by the crowd, and two, by the kind of freshness of the overall match.
I agree with you. I think there's no way they would have ever topped or met the expectation. I think the expectations went way too high for that for them to fight again. That was just a perfect storm that everything came together the way it did. I'm with Chad. I don't think they could have possibly, you know, matched that up again.
So wait, so we're all in agreement then that their WrestleMania match is better than their Halloween Havoc match?
I don't. Well,
I mean, God,
you know, that had time to season, you know.
Plus, the other thing, also, you also got to take. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say, also look at the crowds. I think a Toronto crowd is way better than an LA crowd.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes, that is. Yeah, that's true too. The other thing is, I guess I don't know if he's just saying this now because, like, at this point in his life, maybe you can only believe about 35% of what comes out of Hogan's mouth. But now he's,
I don't think it's
now
that
he's much. He's come now he's generous. Saying, yeah, now he's saying that he wanted to be the heel in that match with Warrior. That's a bunch of shit. I don't believe that for a
no,
second.
No way. No way.
I don't
way.
Believe that for one he second
is
that he would have wanted
fucking shit right now.
Yeah. He there was no way he would have wanted to go into that match as a bad guy. No way in hell. He would never have given all of that support to Warrior. No way in hell. He wanted to do the whole, because remember he yelled at Earl because Earl was about to give the belt to Warrior and Hogan pretty much dressed him down because he wanted to do the whole passing of the thing and walk, run, riding the little cart thing off into the sunset. There was no way he wanted to be a heel. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
I want to. Well, I just want to defend quickly the LA crowd because I know I agree. I mean, the Toronto crowd was amazing. I thought that LA crowd at seven was one of the best LA crowds they've ever had. I thought they were pretty lively for that whole show.
I think it was because it was actually indoors. If it was outdoors at the Coliseum, I don't think that it would have had the same effect as it was when it was inside.
Right, yeah, maybe they keep it out there if they do Hogan Warrior.
Mm.
The only way you could do Hogan and Warrior again was to have Savage and Warrior at the Rumble. And then Savage, what would he do for Mania? You know, there was nobody for him to work with at that point.
Yeah, you can't have him in Slaughter, I mean.
mm-hmm. How about this, guys? How about this one?
Him and Duggan.
What if... Oh, please. Here's a question for you guys. What if Duggan never wrestled at any WrestleManias ever? Then other guys would have gotten bigger wins. And no, I'm only kidding. How about this one? Let's say that Luger actually beats Yoko in that first match at 10.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Do you think Brett Luger would have been a better main event than a Brett Yoko rematch? Do you think Brett would have got the same juice if he had beaten Luger? What do you guys think? Anybody, throw it out there. Anybody.
Well, of course, me. Yeah, I'm going to say yeah, of course. I just look at the pops at the Rumble when they would announce, they went back and forth to see who the crowd was behind. They were clearly behind Brett more than Luger. So even if Luger won the belt, the crowd would have popped for Brett. He comes out with a limp and then wins the title. How can you not cheer that guy on?
Mm. I'll say this, though. I think it would have been a better match, but I think the story isn't as good because Yoko had held the title for so long that it meant more for Brett to beat him. I feel like if Luger wins it, it tarnished. I know we didn't know at the time that Luger was never going to win it, but at the time, I feel like if he had an hour and a half long reign, I think that hurts Luger. I think you kind of ruin his first title win, and I think it means more for Brett to have, you know, beat Yoko, the guy that beat him the year before. I feel like we would have had a better match with Brett and Luger, but I feel like the story was more complete with Yoko.
Right. Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the match suffered, but I don't think anybody cared at that point. That was another one of those moments where it's like, you just want that guy to win and then roll with it. Does anybody have any others? What other ones could...
I got one that's not a big one, but I'm intrigued of what would have happened. What if they had at WrestleMania 4 Ricky Steamboat defeat Valentine in the first round and do the Savage Steamboat rematch?
Yeah, I think that would have been a great opportunity for them to kind of fill out that WrestleMania 4 card with a great mid-card type match right there in the middle of the card. I would have cut some of the Roberts Rude Boar Fest.
All of it.
Certainly added to that match if it would have taken place.
Now, wait, do you keep Steamboat and Savage in that middle, or do you put them in the final? Because people are going to expect at least 30 minutes, And right. Was it round two was only 30, so would that be enough time, or would you want DiBiase to still lose at the end?
You could have DiBiase in the finals.
Yeah, I'd put DiBiase in the finals.
Maybe
yeah,
you do it in the semis. Maybe you have Steamboat get through, and he fights Savage there instead of one-man gang. Maybe you reconfigure things a little bit. But I think not having that match somewhere in that tournament kind of hurt. Especially because Savage could have gotten his win back. I feel like it kind of would have legitimized him again. Now he gets that monkey off his back, defeats Steamboat, and then advances on.
Yeah, they could have really built that too, you know, and talked about it and could have used the clips, the highlights from the year before and kind of interspersed it at that little moment in the show when you were pumping it up. Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting. Never thought of that. I got one. How about say, well, here's a simple one. We've all talked about WrestleMania 2. Well, most of us have. What if they did end up signing Nikita Koloff? And you had Hogan Koloff in the cage at WrestleMania 2. I think the match would have been... I mean, look, as a 12-year-old, Bundy was you know... Now we look back like, oh, geez, it's only Bundy. But back then, still, Bundy was very imposing if you're, you know, a young kid. But I tell you, you know, Nikita Koloff starts crushing Hogan with the chains, hangs him. Do you do the same thing in Phoenix on that Phoenix Science main event that you did with Bundy, except, you know, beat the shit out of him with the chains, wave the Russian... I mean, he would have... been better than I mean, Nikolai at that point was already a fodder, you know, and all of a sudden you're waving the Russian flag and it gets, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it would have been pretty intense of a WrestleMania main event. Maybe even awesome. Too intense for that era, you know?
Well, Scott, even too, just bringing up WrestleMania 2, what if it was just been Hogan and Piper?
In a cage?
Even just one-on-one at WrestleMania, Hogan and Piper, you know, they never... Well, they did have, was it the Wrestling Classic where they faced?
Yeah, and that ended. That ended in a shitty schmoz.
See, if you put Piper in there, he has to lose. He can't do his I'm not going to lose clean thing. And back then, all he did was, you know, schmozes and stuff.
Yeah. Well, at least we would have had to see that debacle of a boxing match. I don't know what main event. Oh, go ahead.
What about, because there did matches around that time, Hogan and Savage. They had a bunch of matches at Madison Square Garden, where it was like Lumberjack, and then I think they did an ODQ at one point, and Savage was winning them by countout. So he was being built for something. They could have at least put him in there for WrestleMania 2.
I think the bigger annoyance for Savage was that they didn't do him and Santana at WrestleMania 2. I don't know why they did the title change. I don't know why they did the title change at the house show. I don't know why they didn't do it at Mania instead of that awful George Steele match.
Ugh. George Steele match is so bad.
All right, here's a crazy one that obviously no one's going to agree with, but I think we got to throw it out there. What if they do Hogan Orndorff at 3 instead of Hogan Andre?
Are you moving the venue?
You have to, right?
Yeah, you have to wrestle at the University of Detroit's gym.
Well, I mean, Hogan Orndorff was big. I mean, I think it was tapering a bit by 3. But what if you push the whole arc back? What if you start it later in 86?
He definitely would not have put it. It would have worked, but he would have done it. Jordan, it would have been in your backyard, probably.
Yeah, probably at the Joe.
Yeah, I don't think you could put it at the Silver Dome. I mean, nothing against Orndorff. He was a great. The only way you pull that off is if Orndorff went in as champion.
Yeah, and I don't think they're ready to do that. Yeah.
And that would not have happened.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me throw this one out instead. Then going back to 4. Do you think things would have been radically different? Obviously, it would have been a little different if they went with the original plan of DiBiase winning the tournament because Savage had won the IC title belt from Honky at the main event. Chad, I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could have worked for sure in that card. I mean, to me, 4 is a perfect example of kind of a card that I hold in nostalgic value just because I probably rented it more than any other show when I was a kid because of the double box. I think that was some marketing genius because just the fact that it said you'd have 4 hours of wrestling versus 3 to me seemed like a extreme bonus. But that show really had a lot of areas where you could have improved them, and I think that definitely could have been one angle they could have went towards.
I think it would have been different, still being in the early stages of WrestleMania, but it would have been the first time where, A, the last image of the show wasn't Hogan in the ring posing, and 2, you have a heel as your last image. and the fans just being like, wow.
Well, you can still have Hogan come out and run him off. I mean, if you have DiBiase kind of steal the title and Hogan comes out and
right.
And runs him off. If you still do DiBiase Savage, I mean, yeah, I guess they could have done DiBiase Hogan in the finals too if they wanted to. I don't know. Interesting.
I think it would have been okay, but then you might have missed out. I mean, really what made the ending of 4 good is the whole year in between 4 and 5 with Savage and Hogan, and you might have missed out on all that.
Yep.
So. Sure.
All right, any more modern ones? I know there's a lot of times there's matches that have been rumored over the last few years that never went down, you know, shit like Hogan and Kali and Hogan and Big Show and stuff like that. Any ones off the top of your head you could think of that were rumored to have happened more recently and didn't?
I think Hogan versus Austin at 18 is one that, I mean, we did get the Hogan versus Rock match, which is really great, but having Austin on that card, still being, you know, one of the main stars of that promotion, and kind of muddled facing Scott Hall kind of in the middle of that card, to me really detracts from that overall card. So I would have traded Hogan versus Austin, and I can see the dynamic from the crowd being just as good with them two facing off, and then you'd have really the two biggest stars in the promotion since 1984 going one-on-one.
I think that'll probably go down as the biggest robbery of a match that fans will never get to see. I think that's the ultimate main event in WrestleMania history that never happened, because I think that's the one that needed to happen. You had the guy in one era versus the guy in another era, and the promos would have been great. But again, this is where – now, I don't know if he would have gotten the same – let's say for the heck of it that this match does happen. You wonder if the two of them would have gone off on each other like they had Shawn go off on Hogan in the summer of 2005.
No, because the Hogan backlash hadn't started yet in 2002.
That is true. I don't know if the difference is, as much as the match would have been great, in my opinion, is that Rock kind of let the Hogan nostalgia feel that night in Toronto kind of overwhelm him. It's no secret that Austin and Hogan really Austin was not a big fan of his to begin with. See, there's a difference. Rock didn't know about the WCW Hogan as much as obviously Austin did. So the nostalgia wasn't there. I don't think Steve would have been as warm and fuzzy during that feud.
Is it part of it too that maybe Rock was more secure in his spot and felt a little bit better giving to Hogan, even though he was going to lose anyway? I mean, Hogan was going to job for him. Austin at that time was starting to really get paranoid, and I wonder if that played any role in him not wanting to get in there with Hogan. Any of you guys think that's the case?
Well, I think him not getting that match led to his paranoia. Remember, he didn't show up for the party afterwards. Yeah. That's part of it. What do you guys think?
I kind of think the match would have stunk. Honestly, I just don't think their styles really. I mean, Austin was basically just run all over the arena, chair shot. Like, I don't think Hogan could have kept up with Austin. Like, Rock kind of slowed down for him and did what he needed to do to make them both look good. I just don't think it would have happened with Austin.
I agree. I think Rock gave him a better match than Austin would have.
Yeah.
Rock knows how to control his pace.
Yeah.
So the other question is, I mean, what else could Austin have done at that show that would have been better than Hall? I mean, do him an angle again maybe instead?
Triple H maybe.
So you have Austin as champion instead of Jericho?
Yeah.
I would have no problem with that.
Yeah.
regardless of who won. Well, regardless of who won, it wouldn't matter to me.
Well, yeah, is it going to play up the power trip stuff, you know?
Yeah. The other thing... you know, also Rock wasn't hurt. You know, Austin was always, and this has been said in that Austin would have been nervous because Hogan, you know, Hogan's is not the kind of guy that knows how to handle matches with protecting injuries of opponents. That's not his style. He just goes out there, does his 8 moves and poses.
I don't know. So I kind of disagree with that. I don't know. I'm curious what everyone else thinks. I think if you're looking for a guy that is going to be safe in the ring and is experienced in that setting, I think Hogan is your guy. It's not like he was some young, you know, like Brock Lesnar in 2002. I think he is a guy you'd want to be in there with if you're hurt. Do you guys agree? Start with you, Greeny.
Yeah, I agree. Hogan might, you know, have his say backstage and have different points of view, a different point of view on everything. But I think that if you're in the ring with Hogan, you know you're going to be protected.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, at this point in time in Hogan's career, it wasn't like you were going to have to take a lot of high-impact moves from him. Maybe a pretty terrible-looking chair shot, but that was about the extent of his damage.
Back rake.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that probably wasn't much of a concern. I think it was more, maybe it's the political part of it. And like you said, Scott, I think it did lead to some of that paranoia.
Yeah.
On Austin's part. So let's kind of transition now into something along the similar lines, and that is the biggest disappointment at a WrestleMania. So not maybe now a missed opportunity, but something you were really kind of amped up for or hyped for that really just fell flat and didn't deliver. I'm going to kick it off with a discussion on one that we were there live for at WrestleMania 20, and I'm sure no surprise where I'm going, that is Brock Lesnar and Goldberg. Do you guys think it would have been different if both guys were staying? Do you think maybe the match goes differently? Do you think it got derailed because of the crowd? Greeny, you were there, so let's start with you. What did you think?
Actually, that's what I have on my list, is Goldberg and Brock. I think if they were both staying, then it would have been different. Something like that is what Vince loves. It's the two big hosses going at it. And, I think if they were both staying, it would have been a different match.
Well, if they were both staying, who would have won that match?
I would guess Goldberg.
Goldberg would have to have won. Yeah, I would have to go Goldberg.
Because he's the baby face.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I don't know where Goldberg would have been headed after that. I'm really curious. You can kind of see the path maybe for Brock. I'm just trying to think where Goldberg would have gone from there, you know?
Maybe versus Orton. I can see that, like, to patch after his feud with Foley.
Mm. Maybe a feud with Batista?
Yeah, that could be one, too, yeah. Just kind of as a gatekeeper for the Evolution members.
Hmm. All right, let's toss it over to Nichols. Do you have any on your list, biggest disappointment?
My biggest disappointment was Bob Backlund and Bret Hart at WrestleMania 11.
Yes, that's a good one.
I expected so much more, you know.
Yeah,
and just so much longer, and then just got, you know, and I love Bob Backlund, and I love Bret Hart, but it was just such a shit fuck of a match. I mean, and then Piper with the mic every 2 seconds, like, I don't, like, God, you know, just let them do their thing and let them wrestle for a little bit before you shove the mic in there.
What do you say?
he was doing I quit questions during a headlock.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, even without Piper, I still don't think, I don't know, I think they had such great matches in 94, I don't know if they were just out of ideas or if the heat just wasn't, that feud had simmered down so much that it really felt like they were just sticking Bret in there. Even as someone who wasn't completely on the inside workings, I still think it, even just to general fans, it probably felt a little bit like, all right, what's Bret really fighting for here?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Any other disappointments? Gotta be some more. Any recent ones?
I'm going to do a couple of recent ones. My first one is WrestleMania 27, the Cena versus Miz match. I was there live for that one. And the crowd, I do think, was ready for Miz. And they had that awesome video package for him for his entrance. And he really he kind of looked like a star right till the bell rung.
Mm.
And then just, it just deflated in that arena. The match was bad. Cena was bad. Miz was bad. And I really don't know if he's ever been repaired. And to kind of go off of that, I would say The Rock, actually, his performance in WrestleMania 28 versus John Cena, because I think that's the type of match. I mean, we've seen some great, great matches in WrestleMania the past few years, mostly involving The Undertaker with various opponents. But I don't necessarily kind of see those as dream matches when they happen. I mean, I know the hype, really, for the Undertaker-Shawn match at 25, I thought was pretty good, but it's something that I wasn't really pumped for going into the show. And Cena Rock kind of felt like a throwback, even though the build was terrible. It did kind of feel like a throwback to a Warrior Hogan type match, just a dream match that you really a couple years before didn't think you'd ever get to see, and now you are seeing. And I was pretty disappointed by that match overall as well.
I think Rock's sticking his nose in that match, I think, ruined it too. That was just an odd show overall, WrestleMania 27. It just seemed like the tone of that show. I love the set. The set was great with the gleaming ramp and everything. But I felt like the crowd that whole show was just so weird.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, Chad. I mean, it just seemed very odd. I don't know. Maybe it was the building. They weren't bad. I mean, it wasn't like California bad. You still wonder how Anaheim got two WrestleManias. But there was something odd, like something off about that crowd that night. I don't know what it was. It was very
probably
weird.
It was a lackluster show. That's why.
Well, yeah. I think Cole and Lawler.
Cole and Lawler. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Had a lot of blame because that was
took too long.
Know, yeah, I've never been to prison. But that's probably the closest. Sitting there live.
To me, that had to be... that's on my list of biggest disappointment. Because I thought that feud was awesome. And I was really excited for that match. And then it just went so downhill so quickly. I don't get it. I mean, I don't get how you don't have Lawler to squash him in that match. It made no sense to me to build it the way they did. And then not have Lawler just kill him. I mean, you could have still continued it. It just pointed all ways to Lawler just killing him with the pile driver and pinning him and ending it. And that would have been an awesome feud that they had from January till March. I think the thing with Rock at that show, too, is that they assumed just by Rock's involvement, because he had been gone so long, that I think everyone would just be into it. They figured, oh, we can do whatever we want because Rock will be out there and the fans are going to love him. And, you know, it was an ominous sign in the beginning when Rock's opening little host speech was just not that great. And I think from then on, it kind of killed the flow of his appearance on that show.
Mm, I agree.
People may not agree with me, but when I remember 27, I actually ordered that on pay-per-view. Last time I'm ever ordering one of their pay-per-views. But no one may agree with me, and that's fine. But when Rock came out and did his little promo at the beginning, I'm sitting there going, this is Raw. Why am I watching a promo at the beginning of WrestleMania?
Yeah.
It's bad enough when they put the musical acts, like when Kid Rock opened it up for 10 minutes, you know, that's bad enough. But now I'm seeing I paid $50 for a Rock promo. Give me a break, you know, put the wrestling on. That's what I'm here for. Let Rock talk on Monday night, you know, and to me, I knew something was going to be bad about the show the whole time I'm watching this Rock promo. And then it wasn't even good. You know, it was horrible.
Horrible
way to start the show.
Do you guys think they should have went with the original plan of, well, I don't know if it was the original plan. One of the rumored plans was to hotshot Rock Cena and go with Miz and Morrison. Because remember, that was a hot feud in January. That awesome match on TV, the no holds barred match. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you right now, why didn't Morrison get his title shot on a pay-per-view to begin with?
Well, they did the Lawler thing in between, but...
Yeah, well, why put Lawler on the Elimination Chamber? They gave him a title shot. What the hell? Put Morrison in there to begin with. I mean, he was red hot at that point. Why didn't they do it then?
Jordan Duncan, we haven't heard from you in a while. Let's go. What do you think on this?
Oh, I would have loved it, man. I love John Morrison. I know he's kind of like the internet whipping boy because apparently his girlfriend's a skank or something, but I thought he was awesome, but I would have loved to see that match, like Nichols said, at least at Elimination Chamber. It doesn't have to be at Mania.
Right.
So
I think it would have been huge if they had it at Mania, and I think at the time, and I think it was right when we were starting our shows, right, Scott, was right before that Mania, I was against doing Rock Cena right away. I know we had some debates about it, and I just didn't want to see it. I thought it would have been too rushed. I liked the year build, but looking back in retrospect, I was wrong on that. I think they would have been better off just doing it, getting out of the way, not having that hype and that pressure of that year-long build, and maybe you do let Miz shine a little bit more. He wouldn't look maybe as much of a job boy beating Morrison in a hot match on the undercard and just doing Rock Cena there.
Was that the same year that Morrison did like the crazy stuff at the Rumble, like the Spider-Man leap and stuff too?
I think so, because that was his
He was a big deal then.
Yeah, he was. And Chad and I were talking about this today because I was watching WrestleMania 26 and I was chatting with him. And I'm like, you know, how did they miss the boat? They missed the boat on so many mid-card guys during that stretch. MVP and Morrison were two of them, I thought, that really should have been more than they were. And Morrison, just during that one stretch from 2010 into early 11, just, I don't get it. I don't get what they missed and how they didn't make him a bigger star. And I know, Chad, you had a couple thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can even group Miz into that. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate, and it's something you really hope. I mean, I'm obviously pumped about going to WrestleMania this year, but you look at the top matches. There's a lot of nostalgia at the top of that card, and that's kind of disappointing. And I do think they did miss the boat with some guys like Morrison, with MVP. As I told you today, I mean, MVP at WrestleMania 23 when he faced Benoit and came out with that entrance with the kind of the basketball theme and stuff like that. He really looked like a star, kind of poised in the making. He looked as much of a star there to me as somebody like Cena did at WrestleMania 20. So it's kind of unfortunate that they've had these guys that are not even in the company anymore that really seemed poised and destined to become main event level stars.
Mm. Yeah, I concur with that. A lot of mid-card guys, and that's why they left. And, you know, because they saw the writing on the wall. And I think that's a problem now, is the mid-card is being. I mean, you've got some awesome heels now on this roster. Guys like, I mean, at least Barrett's actually got a match now, but look at Cesaro. Cesaro was red hot, you know, when he first won the U.S. title and he had the thing coming out with the flag and everything. And now he's trading wins and losses. I mean, I watch it every week. Main event, SmackDown, win, lose, win, lose. It's just that's what happens. That's what happened to those guys in the end. And, you know, Morrison had so many opportunities. And obviously at the time at 27, don't forget, there was the whole Trish debacle with
Snooki.
With Snooki and with what's her name?
Melina.
With Melina and that whole mess. Yeah. So he fucked himself from that point on. So
I don't know why he stayed tied with her. I mean, she obviously was screwing with him the whole time, you know, cheating on him and everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why he didn't.
Because at the end of the day, JR, he's still a guy.
All right, well, he's a good-looking guy that's a multimillionaire on TV. You're telling me you couldn't find anyone else besides Bang and Melina? I mean, come on.
Hey, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it either. Apparently,
Batista has something that he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, well, size, probably.
That too.
Yeah.
It's more than 4 inches of mediocrity.
He left.
You know, Batista wishes he had a real woman like Judy Martin, let me tell you right now. Speaking of Batista, one match, maybe it was the feud that was just so flat, but a match that I really was looking forward to that didn't deliver for me was Cena and Batista at 26. I really felt good about that match. I don't know why, because it was two guys that came up at the same time, was built at the same time, and then the match just was just not good. It was really dull. I don't know if Batista was feeling that he was on his way out the door or he was about to job.
I think you're shortchanging it. I don't think it was great, but I don't think it was dull or bad. And what do you guys think? I'm really curious. I just watched this one today. Chad, what do you think?
I like the match. I like that match. I don't think it was as good as their SummerSlam match a couple years before. I think they fought for the first time at SummerSlam 08. But I didn't think that match kind of derailed the card, really. I mean, I did. Obviously, it wasn't like an epic main event WWE Championship match, but I thought it was satisfying with Cena regaining the belt.
How about you, Jordan?
I thought it was, it wasn't terrible. I think it suffered from going on right before, like, an all-time great match.
Mm.
So even if it's 3 stars, then you get a 5-star match right after, you're immediately going to forget about it. So not bad, but just kind of forgettable, I guess.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Do you think, I mean, obviously, I think another one on this list, the biggest disappointment is Bret and Vince. The hype for that was so great. And my idea at the time that I kind of wish they did was to have Vince in Batista's corner and Bret in Cena's corner. And if Cena wins, Bret gets 5 minutes with Vince. And I think you could accomplish the whole thing they did in that match with Bret just beating the piss out of him for 5 minutes. And I think you take away the whole having to hide Bret. I mean, I just watched that today, and it's like he barely does anything in the beginning. So you have the whole Hart family beat the crap out of Vince. And then by the time Bret does take over, you feel bad for Vince because he's just killing him with chairs and everything else. Greeny, what did you think? Did you think that would have been a better plan, or did you like the way they did it?
I agree with you. I think that they should have changed it around. It just had too much going on in too little time in that match. I liked how they involved Harry Smith and Tyson and Natty, but yeah, I think it
it could have been built completely different.
Well, I've always said... Oh, go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, without Bruce Hart sticking his fucking two cents in the mess.
Yeah, that too. Well, what I've always said, that's about, you know what, that might even be a bigger disappointment for me than Cena, Batista. And that's because the three guys, because remember they had the whole family come out and everything, the three guys that would have made the build and the match even better were all dead. Owen, Pillman, Bulldog. Those guys were all still alive. Brought them back in as part of this build. That would have been fantastic. And none of them were there.
I couldn't agree more.
You were stuck with Bruce. You were stuck with Bruce and Keith. Was Keith even there? Smith and all those other mumbling guys that they're still like out of place. And yeah, I mean, if those guys were, if Owen and Pillman, you would have definitely brought Pillman back if he wasn't a puddle, you know, if he wasn't a mess at that point. Probably, I don't know if he still would have been walking, but and Owen obviously, and obviously Bulldog. Those three main cogs, guys who knew how to get it right, guys who would have made the energy of that great, and they weren't there. And it was a shame. I was actually sad. During that match, I was, you know, with the guys I was watching with, because I'm like, this would have been so much better if the three of them were here, because Owen would have hammed it up, and Pillman would have hammed it up, and Bulldog would have been, you know,
a lot of storylines in the WWF would be, or E would be different if those guys were around. I mean,
that's true too. Yeah, that's true too. But WrestleMania 26,
they could have almost reenacted a Canadian Stampede.
Yeah. Yeah. Easily. Probably could have made a match out of it. Vince could have got a team together. could have probably done a 10-man tag. It probably would have been better if all those guys were still alive. Why not?
All right, let me throw this one out there for you. We'll start with Chad. Iron Man match at 12. Would you consider that a disappointment?
I don't know why. I feel like I'm kind of one of the defenders of that match, and I don't even really love it. But I do think having the Iron Man step was not the way to go. I think if they would have had kind of a, even just a 1 hour time limit draw and then have the same thing happen that did. I think the Iron Man step, you kept kind of waiting for something to happen in that match. And there was a couple of like big sequences where I always remember Shawn Michaels super kicking the bell keeper or whatever. And I really thought that for a match that had a lot of flaws, Vince and King on commentary really did good to keep that match flowing. But overall, I'd say that match is kind of a slight disappointment just because you did expect a WrestleMania classic match, and some would argue it is, but I mean, I think there's been a ton of better matches in WrestleMania history than that one.
And that's always my argument, that they should have not done the stipulation. They should have just went an hour. It would have been way more fulfilling of a finish.
Yeah.
I don't defend this match often. I'm kind of like you, JR. After a while, you just can't. But I'm only going to say this. I think a lot of people kind of crap on that Iron Man match for two reasons. Number one, because it had no pins. And number two, because at the time, we'd never seen it before. And now we've got, like, there's at least, off the top of my head, three Iron Man matches that were better. Obviously, Triple H Rock at Judgment Day 2000. The Kurt Brock one on SmackDown. And probably the Benoit Triple H one on Raw wasn't bad either. But at the time, no one had a comparison. But now we all say that Iron Man match was dull because those three Iron Man matches were great. So I think at the time, I don't think people finished watching that show going, God, that match sucked. I think in retrospect, people now think that match isn't as good because there have been better Iron Man matches since. So I have to say that I don't think that match was as bad at the time as a lot of people think, because there was anything to compare it to. And an hour, the only reason an hour seemed long is because you almost thought they should have put more activity into it. And maybe there's a lot more rest holds in the middle. But, you know, there's only so much you could probably invent in 60 minutes without using a lot of weapons. That was the best thing about Rock and Triple H at Judgment Day 2000, was that they had so many creative things with countouts and you know, chair shots and everything. And they didn't do that at 12. They probably could have been a little more creative in that match. But I don't think it was as bad as people thought at the time. I think people look back poorly on it now because the Iron Man matches since have been better. I don't know.
No, I didn't. I wasn't crazy about it at the time, but that's just me. I mean, I was just kind of bored during it. And I think, like Chad said, because you knew they were going the hour, once you started getting within that like 15-minute stretch with no pins, you kind of knew where they were going. And I feel like if they just had the match and went a long time without a finish, I think you're would have been in a little bit better shape. So any other older ones we're missing? Jordan, you got any on your list?
I got one, yeah. Now, JR, you're going to hate this because my complaint is one that I know you don't like. I'm mad because they didn't go with my fantasy booking idea in this one. WrestleMania 16, I was so convinced that Foley was going to win, walk out as a hero, give up the title, and they were going to start a tournament the next day. And instead, we got Foley just kind of losing for no real reason, so we could have a McMahon in every corner and Triple H, you know, walking out as the first heel to ever win.
Now, wait, why did you think I hate that?
Well, maybe it's not you. I swear I've seen you say you hate when people complain about the booking because it didn't happen the way we wanted it to. Maybe it wasn't you. Maybe.
Oh no, I have said that, but I like that. I wanted that to happen too. So.
Oh. Well, there you go.
My complaint when people do that is when they assume something's going to happen, or. Yeah, I guess that's what it is. It didn't happen the way you wanted it to happen, but that's a legitimate possibility. That was something that could have happened.
I was convinced that's what they were going to do.
I hate when people build up this wild shit and it doesn't happen and they get pissed off. Like, oh, I wish, you know, Rick Rude came back from the dead and defeated Mick Foley at WrestleMania 16. You know, why didn't they book that? You know, I think that's the shit that annoys me.
If only Owen and Pillman had been there to fight Vince with that, you know?
Right, yeah, shit like that. Stupid shit like that. No, that's the stuff that bugs me. No, something like that, Jordan, I think was plausible. I think that was heavily rumored at the time because remember, Linda even said it on TV. I don't know if you remember that. She said if Mick Foley were to win the title, they would put it up in a tournament.
That would have been awesome.
I thought for sure that's where they're going. Once they put it out there, I'm like, why would they even bring it up if it's not going to happen?
And I thought Jericho was going to win the tournament too.
That would have been pretty cool too.
Yeah, he was my hero back then. So.
I think that's a good one, Jordan. I think that's a really good one. Anyone else think that was possible, or would you prefer that to what happened?
Oh, absolutely. Well, absolutely. I mean, just after coming off the emotional impact of the two matches that Foley had with Triple H at Royal Rumble and No Way Out, it felt really anticlimactic, him in that match. I don't know. I really don't understand why he was
really
there.
Bad in the match, too, didn't he?
Yeah, it's almost like
when
they announced him, I think they announced him for the actual match, what, about 2 weeks before it happened?
Yeah.
It almost feels, I mean, I don't know, I guess I need to reread Foley's book, but it almost feels like they told him 5 minutes before they announced it, because he does not seem kind of mentally checked in. I mean, he's never had a great physical prowess for most of his career, but, I mean, he was Owen in the Royal Rumble and No Way Out match, and here he just looked kind of a little bit out of it and disinterested.
Well, I think part of it was he was a little embarrassed and felt bad. I think that's what he said in his book, because he felt like he wanted to keep that promise, and he felt, here I am 3 weeks later, and Vince apparently said to him something like, you know, everyone loves you, Mick. They're not going to be mad at you for coming back. Everyone wants to see you again. I mean, it's obvious they only put him in there to do the four McMahon thing, so that's what made it even worse, and they really didn't go out of the way to protect him, like you said. And, yeah, he is kind of an afterthought in that match. And I think it was just to get him that Mania main event, and, again, to get the McMahons in each corner. But I agree with you, Chad. I think it's just felt kind of shoehorned in. Jeremy?
I'm going to be a jerk and say that I would have rather have seen Rock and Triple H one-on-one. Like, I need Big Show, and I'm not really a Foley fan. Like, I have nothing against him, but, you know, he does seem out of place, and so does Big Show. Big Show seems really out of place because he got eliminated in, what, like 5 minutes? So they really, like, to me, I know that they kept it for Backlash and all that crap and Austin coming back, but I would have rather, even if Triple H still won, I'd rather see him and Rock in a one-on-one, because to me, that's, like, my Mania matches, the main events are always one-on-one, not triple threats or four ways, you know, but that's just me.
No, I agree with you. I agree. I think they should have just done Rock Triple H. I think that's the match everyone wanted to see. And I agree with you. I get why they held off the Backlash, and it makes perfect sense. They were going to do a monster buy rate anyway. But yeah, it's just an odd choice to stick them in there. All right, anyone else have one on their list before we move along?
No, we could go on all night. There's just so many of them if you really think about it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just a real quick one, and I think this is a consensus that the Triple H Orton dynamic going into WrestleMania 25 is all kind of out of whack. So I think with Triple H defending the title and them wanting to have a classic NWA type match after Orton's been punting everybody in his family just felt kind of strange.
Yeah. How great was Orton at that time?
Oh, he was awesome.
He beat Stephanie and then laid a big one on her. Oh, man. That was perfect. And then they fudged it all up.
Well, I know a lot of people got mad with the Shane stuff. They thought, you know, Orton sold too much for Shane during that whole part.
He did.
Yeah, he did. And I agree with Chad, though. I don't get why they made that such a flat, regular match. How is that not a crazy brawl? And even worse is that Triple H was champion, which made less sense to me, too. I guess Orton did all that stuff to get the title shot. I don't know. Just the whole thing was just odd. I don't know. It was just weird booking.
That match is why I'm nervous about this match this year with Triple H and Brock, because look what happened. I mean, the Triple H and Brock, their brawl from a few weeks ago, that was awesome. If that's what Mania match is like this year, it's going to be an awesome match. But it could be like Triple H wants to be Ric Flair again.
Well, see, I think
anybody taking money that's not what happens, that Triple H tries to be Ric Flair. Do we have a bucket on that for money?
I don't think it goes that way, because I think two things are going against it. One, I think Brock is naturally just better than Orton. Even as good as Orton was at that time, I think Brock's just naturally better in the ring. And two is, I think that was when Triple H did still think he could do that kind of thing and put on a great classic match. I think he's past that point now. I think he knows. I think he's a guy that realizes his limitations. I really do. I think he's starting to come to grips. And that's why I think their match at SummerSlam was more of a brawl, and I think we'll get another brawl here. I mean, I just don't see him. He's a smart guy, as much as we all like to bag on him, and you know, Scott will back him up, I'm sure. But he is a smart guy. I think he knows that if he goes out there and tries to have a 20-minute, you know, rest hold fest, that it's just going to get run out of the building.
I also think the fact that Orton and Triple H had to follow Taker and Shawn that year, too.
Mm-hmm.
That hurt.
It did.
Yeah.
But that should have been even more reason for them to go all out and do something crazy.
And they could have had a brawl that, you know, would be different from the Shawn-Taker match and still be effective. I mean, I just think the structure of that match was all wrong.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. All right, let's put the disappointment behind us now and kind of flip the script a little bit. We're going to go on to Guilty Pleasure WrestleMania match or moment, anything. Chad, I'll start with you. Do you have any of mine?
Yeah, this is probably the one I'm most excited for. One right off the gate is WrestleMania 3. And WrestleMania 3 has a lot of great moments in it, but kind of one of my favorites, and I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this on radio, but one of my favorites is the King Kong Bundy, Little Tokyo.
And oh, for God's sakes. You've got to be kidding. How do you not like that, though?
And Little Beaver. I have great memories of watching that, you know, as a kid with my mom doing whatever in the background, and she, you know, was always kind of a bastard because she always cheered when Bundy drops the elbow on Beaver and laughs hysterically.
Good for her. So was I. Good for her.
But come on. That match is just absolute fun. I love that match. I could watch that. And, you know, in the middle of the card, I had no problem with that. For kind of two guys, too, Bundy and Hillbilly Jim, sort of the spotlight was off of them. So that's kind of one of the matches that's not much on paper, but one of my most memorable matches. I can almost recall that match move for move.
Sweet God.
Anyone want to get into WrestleMania 9 as a guilty pleasure, Scott?
Oh, for God's sakes. Really? what are you gonna say? You're going to talk about, perfect. No, let's see. There's no midgets in that one. Oh, well, guilty pleasure. If you're going to mention The Undertaker and a great streak that he's got, but that Undertaker Giant Gonzalez match.
Well, look at this big group of giant, ugly, pussy asshole bags sitting around a table talking about WrestleMania like they know anything. Where's Mr. Graham Compton? That asshole, nobody reads newspapers, so I don't know why he's busy even fucking working on one. He should be here instead of dealing with that useless racket, you hillbilly in his stupid hair. Boom, roasted. Hey, Jeremy Nicholas, Walgreens sucks, and by transitive property, that means you suck too, sir. Walmart is the best, even if they have useless asshole employees as well. Boom, roasted. Chad Gaspard, I hear that. You say bad things about all my times in WCW on your PTB knockoff show. I thought we were friends hanging out at the clubs. jamming a DMX back in 1999, rolling with the Rough Riders. Now you stab Giante in the back like this for ratings? It obviously hasn't worked, as that garbage ranks lower than Derek the Salty Tits Dungeon Show. Boom, roasted. Jason Greenholm, stop posting about going to the gym on Facebook. Nobody cares about every time you lift a 10-pound weight, do a sit-up, take a shit, or eat a Butterfinger. Boom, roasted. Jordan Duncans, your bald head looks like a freshly shaved vagina. Too bad your face looks like Jay Hinchy's asshole. Boom, roasted. Mr. Rosero, you're cool. No boom, not roasted. Mr. Cospolo, you are like an old grand wizard. Too bad you're as stupid as D'Amato is ugly. Only good thing about you and D'Amato is that we have virgins to sacrifice to my friend the Jesus. Boom, roasted. Rotella, get my pimp sled ready, you hairy midget. Time to hit the town and run through some bitches. Goodbye!
Did he just get called Chad Gaspar?
I think we have a new nickname.
I'm a little disappointed. We were just talking about Little Beaver. We could have heard about El Giante going down on Judy Martin's Big Beaver.
That's right.
Well, it's also clear that my PIC threw his 4 inches of mediocrity into Giante because he didn't get roasted at all. So
he knows class. He knows taste.
That's pretty sad. Yeah, see, you two under the Christmas tree this year. All right, well, it still doesn't make up the fact that his match at WrestleMania 9 was a gigantic piece of shaved pussy shit. So there you go, Giante. Come on back. How about it?
Actually, you know, that should have been biggest disappointment that we forgot to talk about Pete Rose at WrestleMania 15.
Pete Rose. Yeah, there we go. Oh, God. El Giante, you're with those girls in Argentina. How about it?
All right, Nichols, give us a guilty pleasure.
The Red Rooster against Brooklyn Brawler at WrestleMania, or I'm sorry, Bobby Heenan at WrestleMania nice. 5. When he comes out with that damn music and it sounds like the Rooster, you know, and he's got the little red thing in his hair, I just crack up the entire 3 minutes he's out there. It's just amazing.
It's crazy that, I mean, that was such like a big build, too, to that match, you know?
You know what strikes me as odd about the Rooster is that, and I love calling him the Rooster, I don't call him Terry Taylor, but the Rooster, if you watch some of the house show matches, MSG matches, he wrestled as a heel exactly like Ric Flair. He did the woo. He kept his knee pads by his shins, always wore red. I mean, he looked exactly like Flair, only younger. Mm. And then he became, you know, and we still call him the Red Rooster. And then he gets to where he finally turns face, and that's when he gets the little red thing and the music, and then he starts pecking, you know, which is really weird but funny at the same time. You know, the whole package was great to me. So that's one that I sit there and watch, and I just laugh. It's great.
And the Red Rooster thing even carried over. I was reading when we were getting ready for 15, when he replaced he came out to replace JR in the commentary booth after JR kicked Cole in the nuts. And he calls him, like, Red Rooster, and he makes a lot of rooster jokes at him. He's like, oh, Red Rooster's going to take over commentary on me, cock of the walk, and all stuff like that. Duncan, you got any?
Yeah, I got one. The blindfold match. WrestleMania.
Yes! I am with you.
That's a good one.
Mm. I agree.
I guess maybe that's not a guilty pleasure if we all like it then.
Yes, because we're a small group, and I've seen that overblown a lot of places. How bad I think, I don't know what people expected. I mean, I thought right. It was a well done interaction match. Is that where you're going
great
with it?
Field too.
Yeah. And the crowd got into it perfectly, you know. Jake points, they all tell him where to go. It was awesome.
Right. It was fun. It was a fun match. It wasn't even that long.
I'd also say Hogan Bundy, just because I know a lot of people say it sucks, especially for a main event, but I loved it as a kid, and I've watched it again not that long ago, and it's not terrible or anything. I mean, it's just kind of there.
Do you think that's one, like, that kind of goes into Scott's theory about the Ironmans, where we've seen how big WrestleMania main events have become, and then mm-hmm. you look back at that, maybe at the time, you know, and if you watch it objectively, it's really not that bad.
Right, yeah, exactly. Those are mine.
Who hasn't gone yet? Greenhouse?
I'm going to take a different road with this, and I'm going to not talk about a match, but a segment. It's something that was talked about on the Facebook chat page a few days ago. The segment from WrestleMania 21 with Hogan and Eugene and Ahmed Hassan, whatever his name is. Just the pop that Hogan gets was incredible.
I agree. I that's a guilty pleasure of mine, too. I always like that moment with the big flag coming down, and yeah, it's pretty cool. I agree with that. I thought you were going to say the Piper's Pit with Austin and Carlito, which I thought was really flat. I'm never a big fan of that segment, but the Hogan segment is very good. I don't know. I did
Coco Martel.
You know, I just was about to say Coco Martel. I was just about to say that.
That's a good
guilty pleasure. Not a terrible match. It's not like guilty because other people think it stinks. I mean, it's actually not as bad an opener as people make it out to be.
How about Duggan on commentary to open WrestleMania 7?
Oh God,
Duggan
is bad news.
It's all American tugs. That is.
He's an all American jack. He's an all American jackass. Is what he is.
I just want to remind Scotty, because I was listening to the Survivor Series 90 podcast the other night at work.
great show.
I love myself enough to listen to it 8 times a day. Duggan's TV record is still 53-2. I just want to bring that up again because that was just amazing.
Yeah. 47 of them he won with a 2x4, even against jobbers. So
you heard that and you went, what?
Yeah, I'm trying. There's gonna be some other ones out there.
A bunch of others.
I like Savage versus Crush from WrestleMania 10.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Kind of feels like Savage plays to Raw with the company. It's kind of a fun, kind of garbage style match, and I always like the finish where he kind of ties Crush's leg up to that contraption, allowing him to win. That was pretty cool.
How about the Playboy pillow fight at WrestleMania 19 or whatever the middle of it.
It's horrible.
Does anybody like the Piper's Pit at WrestleMania 5? Because I know some people kind of it, but
no.
I think it was too long.
Too long.
Yeah, that was the only thing.
Went too long.
Yeah, if you can cut like 6 minutes out of the middle of that, I think, because the whole thing with, let's put it this way, if you dump the Brother Love in the kilt nonsense and just did Piper and Morton Downey, that would have been fine. I know what one of JR's guilty pleasures is, the WrestleMania rap.
Oh, God.
By Run DMC.
WrestleMania. Can't even understand what the fuck they're saying. I like Run DMC.
Oh, God, that's so funny.
I'm going to throw one more out there, and that's the Backlot Brawl from 12.
Yes.
And after reading Dustin's book, I appreciate that match a little more.
Yeah, I read it too. Yeah, I agree. My only drawback with that is, I really wanted to enjoy that Savio Austin match, and if it was a shit match I didn't care about, then I probably would have enjoyed it more. But I feel like that match was actually not awesome, but not terrible, and it got like lost in the shuffle of that. That was my only drawback of that. If it had overshadowed like a nothing match on that card, I probably would have liked it more.
Mm.
I just feel bad. I mean, Austin Savio was a really good match, and I feel like it got kind of screwed. Oh,
yeah,
I know my guilty pleasure. I know my easy guilty pleasure.
Sable doing the grind?
Oh, God, no. God. If you've listened to the show last night, clearly no. I think a big guilty pleasure that I have to say that JR has gotten me to appreciate more than I did before I met him, and that's obviously Dusty and Sapphire against Savage and Sherry at WrestleMania 6.
Oh, yeah.
Just to listen to Jesse and Gorilla, just, oh, my God. 450, 550, I might believe, but she's got to get on that sardines and oatmeal diet. It's just absolutely classic. You can
You're
never
telling
take
me
that
Sapphire only weighs 200 pounds.
Yeah. No, he goes, you're telling me that only Rhodes weighs 200 pounds? Oh, God. Anything with Jesse's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah,
well, that's not even a guilty pleasure. That's just a pleasure.
A pleasure, yeah, exactly.
Like, his disgust at Sapphire's offense, where she's, like, just using her hips. He's like, just throughout the match. It's amazing.
What's one of my favorite lines? I think it has to do with Duggan. And Jesse goes, is it Jesse or is it Gorilla? Look at Duggan's face. And Jesse goes, it's disgusting. I'd rather not. Like, I agree. When he had a big snot rocket hanging out of his nose at WrestleMania 5 or 4, whatever the fuck it was. Oh, God. That's all. Anytime Duggan gets made fun of, it's a guilty enough pleasure for me. But
all right, let's switch topics here. Let's go on, move on to most underrated WrestleMania. I think this is a good one. Should be interesting. Let's start with Duncan. What do you got?
I went with 7. It's got, I think Greenhouse said this too, his favorite WrestleMania match of all time, mine too, Warrior and Savage. I think Hogan and Slaughter was really good. There's some other good stuff on there, too. I'm not thinking of it right now. I even liked Bulldog and the Warlord. Was that on that show? I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's a good show that nobody ever really ranked anywhere near their top, and I liked it.
I back you up. I think 7's a lot of fun. I think for some reason it seems like 5, 6, and 7 always get lumped together.
Yeah.
And maybe even 4 you throw in there, that little run. And I feel like because 6 was so kind of epic, even though 7 overall, match quality-wise, is arguably better.
Well, I think 7 is where they really started to have more than just one or two big matches, but like 15 matches total. I mean, there's still a lot of matches on 7, but it seems like, in this case, almost all of them had some story to it, you know, even like Bulldog and Warlord and the Nasty Boys and the Heart Foundation. You know, that's where WrestleMania really started to be about all the feuds kind of culminating at the same time.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah, you could tell. I mean, there was still a lot of matches in that card, but you're right. They were tapering off just the random one-offs, and everything kind of had at least some juice behind it. And by 8, they had completely figured that out because there's no, you know, it was only 8 matches on that card, and they had really cut way down. And that was a lot due to the thinning of the roster. They had really shaved off a lot of the guys between the steroid trial and everything else. So I think 7's a good choice to me. That's the leader in the clubhouse right now, but let's see if anyone else has another one. Jeremy, what do you got?
Mine is 4. You know, when I was a kid and I rented 4, you couldn't get any better than that because you had 4 hours. And then, I mean, it was so different because it didn't have a huge match in particular, like Hogan Andre and Hogan Bundy and then Mr. T and Piper and all that, the first one, but you had this tournament and then Hogan goes out early. Mm. So it's like, who the hell's going to win the rest of this? Like that to me made it even more exciting. You know, maybe DiBiase was going to win. And then Demolition won the tag belts. You can't get any better than that. Just Demolition was great. That match was good. And even Honky and Beefcake was good. It ended shitty, but I mean, it was pretty cool to see, you know, Beefcake chopping up Jimmy Hart's hair. And then I do like the Battle Royal at the beginning just because my man stayed to the end. So, I mean, for me, WrestleMania 4 was just, I still watch it now and I still enjoy it now.
By saying you're bad, you mean Bad News Brown, right?
How'd you know?
Hair.
Who's everybody's favorite hair, bro?
Yeah, 4. 4 is one of those shows that I watch, and I always want to like it. And I'm like, I want to always give it the benefit of the doubt. And then just along the way, I just end up getting a little bit bored with it. I mean, I don't think it's as bad as it's professed to be, but I don't know if I can really count it. I'd rank 7 ahead of it as far as the most underrated goes. All right, Greeny.
I'm definitely staying 7. Let's not forget about the awesome opening tag match.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the best opening matches ever, next to Bret and Owen and Eddie and Ray. And also, we can't forget about me and Gene calling Regis Beautiful.
Yes.
And I'm also going to go with WrestleMania 4, just because it was the first one that I watched live on pay-per-view, and it was back when Mania used to start at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And it just, it brings back so many good memories.
All right, Chad?
I like 7, as everybody's echoed. Also, just more quickly on that card, if you're a fan of Japanese wrestling, seeing somebody like Tenryu win a WrestleMania match is pretty incredible. But another one that I've thought about is WrestleMania 24. To me, it's kind of gets sort of shafted in the middle of the WrestleManias, but it has a lot of good quality. I really love the Michaels Flair match. I really love the main event with Undertaker and Edge. I think the Floyd Mayweather match may be the best celebrity match of all time in a wrestling ring. And then even some stuff like the Money in the Bank, the Triple Threat with Orton, Cena, and Triple H, and even JBL versus Finlay. That was a little disappointing, the beginning, that opener, but it was still a pretty good match. So I like WrestleMania 24 a good bit.
I think it's a good one, and I agree. I do think that's one, when we watched it for our review last year, I kind of gained a better respect for. I think that Triple Threat at the time kind of soured me on it live, but watching it back, I thought it was not as bad as I thought. So now, did everyone go except for me and Scott? I think so, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is 19 still considered underrated, or have we passed that time?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I think we've
passed
that.
I don't think so
either. I almost listed it, but then I thought for the same thing. I
because it was for...
earned it to do, yeah.
It was for a while.
Was. Yeah, it definitely
yeah, it was
for a
while.
Yeah.
I love that show. I think it's... I mean, I you could argue... I know 17 always gets to the pub, but I don't know. I think you could argue 19 may be the best Mania ever.
I mean, there's 4.5 main events, and the half is Triple H and Booker. But you've got Austin and Rock again, Brock and Angle, Shawn and Jericho, Vince and Hogan. That might be a guilty pleasure match for me, Vince and Hogan. I know a lot of people may not think it is, but some people don't like it. I think it's awesome. That's a guilty pleasure, going back to the previous topic. I think another one for me that's an underrated one, after watching it again, JR, and you and I doing the review, is 22 in Chicago. I don't think that one gets as much play overall. I mean, obviously, I love Triple H and Cena, even though, you know, outcome notwithstanding. But I obviously, Edge Foley was great. I think people shit on the triple threat because it was so short. And plus the whole of Ray winning the belt, I think people still don't wrap their head around. But people forget Vince and Shawn was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 22 doesn't get as much play as it should. It's definitely not as bad a show as maybe some people think. I think 22 is underrated.
All right, I'm going to throw this one out there, and I know I'm going to get shit on by everyone in the world. WrestleMania 11, damn it. I think there's such a tight, streamlined, stripped-down roster. I think they did an okay job. I really do. I think LT Bigelow is a really fun match. I love the atmosphere with all the people around ringside. I liked the whole show, how they had all the press around ringside and the cameraman, and I thought they did a good job with that. I thought the celebrities for that Mania were some of the best they had, you know, with Nicholas Turturro and Jonathan. I thought those guys were funny. I thought they had some funny interactions. I thought Vince and Lawler were pretty good on commentary. It's not the greatest wrestling action of all time, but I think it gets way more shit than it deserves. And I don't know if anyone agrees at all, but and I think Shawn Diesel is good too.
You're wrong.
I'd like it more if Shawn and Diesel went on last.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Like if you and Ramon should have won. But other than that, it's not WrestleMania 9, that's for sure.
And I feel like it always gets lumped in with WrestleMania 2 and 9. And I mean, like I said, it's not the greatest Mania, but I really don't think it's as bad as much as malign. Now, someone said I was wrong. Who was that? Were you just being an asshole? Was that your
that
Duncan?
That was me.
Are you being facetious, you jerk?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't really agree that it's that underrated, but it's not a terrible show. I think it kind of suffers because of when it happened.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like WrestleMania. It just seems kind of like a, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It's just nothing you'd really want to go back and rewatch. For me, at least.
I think Jordan thought Andre was in the main event. That's why.
Yeah, well, I'd already seen that, you know. So.
Nah, I don't hate 11 as much as I used to. I'll be honest. Since I've known JR, he's kind of opened my eyes to some of the better, the brighter points of it. But it's still not. It's not. It's still in the bottom level for me. But not as bad as some others are.
Well, I think 7's. The best choice here. I really don't think we're going to find one more underrated than that deserves the tag of being most underrated. I mean, I think 4 is a good choice, and I think 24 is a good choice, but I think 7 is probably the one that you kind of gets forgotten the most as far as quality shows go. So we're moving at a pretty good pace, and the last one we have, I want to save till the end. So Chad, didn't we have a couple kind of in the hopper as backups?
Yeah, we were going to talk about venues and kind of the theming.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing to me, like kind of going into WrestleMania 11 and piggybacking off what Jordan says, like I think we all can agree that WrestleMania 2 and 9 are probably worse shows than WrestleMania 11, but I love the theming of WrestleMania 9.
Mm.
Yeah.
And even though I may consider that probably the worst WrestleMania of all time, it to me, like WrestleMania 11 is a show that kind of feels like the most un-WrestleMania of all the WrestleManias. And even 2 had the concept of the 3 different telecast or whatever from 3 different arenas. So that was kind of a neat gimmick that's, you know, still memorable to this day. So, I mean, I think there's been some really good use of venues and the production side from the stage sets. There has been some kind of awesome moments throughout the WrestleManias. I know WrestleMania 22, I loved having all the pictures of the superstars
Yes.
that were hanging down from the Allstate Arena. I thought that was a really cool visual.
All right, so any other thoughts? Best venue or best set or, you know, theming, like Chad said. Jordan, what do you got?
Oh, gosh, I'm the wrong person to ask on this. I'm so bad at remembering what show look like, what show. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all a blur to me. WrestleMania 9 sticks out because it was so different. And, gosh, which one was it? 4, where they kind of came out down through the crowd for some of the matches? Am I just making this up right now?
Yeah, well, 4 and 5 had
the stairs.
Yeah, had the big stairs.
Yeah, that was kind of cool, but I'm not really the best in terms of remembering setups and things like that. I just never seem to notice it, you know? But, of course, I think it's WrestleMania 6 where you can ride your little motorized ring to the ring. I don't think anything will ever beat that.
Jeremy? Still with us, Jeremy?
Yeah. Okay. I would say at WrestleMania 19, with the big stage and the big, it's so just open. And then the aisle, because it zigzags, you know, you got to come down, you got to turn. And I always thought those were some of the cooler shows where it wasn't just a straight line down to the ring. You know, you had to kind of, there's something weird about that. I always liked it. I think there was a SummerSlam where they had to, like, turn a little corner, go down the aisle. Like, to me, that felt epic. You know, like the stage and how open it was, and the camera was kind of far back than normal, so it looked a little different when they filmed it. Mm-hmm. It almost had a movie-like feel to it. It just felt more epic to me than the rest of them. And maybe 17 comes close, because that, too, was huge, you know, and then the stage was huge, and just everything felt, like, epic and big. And then, like, 11 was really kind of small.
Yeah.
Like Chad said, you know, it just didn't feel like WrestleMania.
Greeny?
I definitely agree with 19. I love the aisle, like Jeremy said. And you know, you got to stick to tradition, Madison Square Garden. If for people who have never been to a show there is nothing like it, whether it's wrestling or basketball or anything, there is nothing like being in that building on a stage like that.
Scott?
Well, I definitely like 19, because not just for the aisle, but like the walls, the background was so odd, because it was like open and kind of not open, and it was really very unique, that whole setup at 19. I agree with Chad about 22 with all the pictures, and then the smartest thing they did was they always had Eddie's picture in the perfect camera shot.
Mm.
So you always saw Eddie's picture in one of the main shots of the when they would do the wide shot. I loved the set. As much as I kind of dissed the crowd earlier, I loved the set at WrestleMania 27 at the Georgia Dome. I always thought with the sheer ramp and just the big circular thing, I thought that was really cool. I thought that was pretty cool. And like Greeny said, you can't say anything bad about the Garden.
No,
there was something about WrestleMania 10. Yeah, 20 was great that we were at. Even WrestleMania 10, I mean, that crowd was – I mean, we're talking about a dip in the product in general. But the crowd at that WrestleMania 10 was red hot. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the matches on that show didn't hurt either. But I've loved the set. So last year's set at Sun Life was pretty cool. The sets have gotten better and better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's become part of it. For a while, it wasn't. You know, now it's become the thing. It really, since 20, I think, is when it really took off as something. I second 19. I like – or third or fourth, however people said it. I like 19 – 24 I liked. I thought that fit well with the color scheme. 26 was really cool with the whole desert theme and the way they tweaked the colors to match that. It was, you know, the burnt kind of colors, the yellow and the red. And I thought they really matched the venue well and the atmosphere well. And I think that stands for 24 too, with all the citrus theme. 7. I liked 7 with the all the U.S. flags everywhere and the American bunting across the way the decks are separated. So on the upper deck, they had that American flag bunting around it. I thought that was unique. I thought it made it stand out, and I liked that whole American theme for that show, even if the war was kind of starting to taper by then. So I think those are the main ones. I had 9, of course. 9 is awesome. I don't think there's a bigger dichotomy between, you know, look and product as 9 as you'll ever get, like, with any other show.
It's true.
Do we have any other ones in the background there, Chad, that we had saved?
Well, I'll just say on 24, like, I love that one, and there's a moment that I really remember, and Scott probably does too, because this is his boy. It's when Triple H's entrance comes out. They do this camera shot where Triple H is walking down the ramp, and the camera's walking up, and they meet, and immediately the camera starts going back, and it just looks amazing. Like Triple H just looks like a monster star. And then in the background, since that's an open-ended stadium, you see kind of the green pyro that shoots off across the back of the stadium, and it just looks really awesome. And that also had Taker's and Flair entrance. One more is WrestleMania 21, all the theming and the vignettes they did for it.
Yes.
Kind of the movie stuff. I thought that was very imaginative and worked out really well.
And I like the marquee, too, where they had the matches would change every time.
Yeah.
Up on like the movie marquee. That's a good one. All right, so here's another topic. It wasn't on the original list, but Chad and I kind of came up with it today. Best Undertaker opponent at WrestleMania. Now, it may seem obvious, but I've heard there may be some dissent here. Let's start with Nichols.
I'm the worst person to ask because I just hate The Undertaker. I'll go with Shawn just because at least Shawn can get him to a watchable match. That's about the best I can do.
All right, Jordan?
I'm going to disagree just because it seems like we've all agreed on every answer so far tonight. And I'll say, how about Nathan Jones?
He was a teammate. He was a teammate, not an opponent.
You know what, Scott? That's irrelevant right now. I'm just trying to spice things up because we're agreeing on everything.
Andre the Giant.
It's got to be Shawn Michaels.
Andre the Giant.
Andre the Giant and the Ultimate Warrior, too. Yeah,
so. Together, yes.
No, I would say Shawn Michaels. I mean, those two matches are awesome. Two of my favorite matches of all time. So, nothing new to add there.
Greeny?
Shawn easily. Besides great matches, they're two of the best storytellers in the history of the business.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Scott because I want to save Chad for last.
Well, obviously, Shawn, at least 25. I love both of his matches. I don't want to say all three. Well, yeah, I'll say all three matches with Triple H, but I definitely want to mention. After watching it a few times more over the last couple of years, I definitely think Diesel at 12 is a match that does not get as much love as it used to. That match is very good. Better than I think anybody thought it would be. I thought they just think it was be two big dudes just, you know, hitting big stiff shots at each other. But it ended up being a good storytelling match. And I think at the time you almost got the feeling that Diesel could win this match. You remember the streak meant nothing in 19.
Right, yeah, as I say, those early ones, it was more believable. I don't think it was until about 21. I mean, 18 was the first time he really, like, acknowledged it when after Flair he held up the 10 fingers. But I think 21 was the first time where they really built it up as, like, a big deal. If Orton could defeat him, it seemed like it would be a big thing. All right, Chad, what do you got?
Okay, you kind of stole my thunder there because I will say Randy Orton. I think the thing now looking in the rearview mirror, obviously the streak is the big thing. So I kind of tried to think about when I thought the streak was the most in jeopardy. And, you know, Triple H hitting the tombstone is by far the greatest live moment I've ever had at a wrestling show. And me and everyone else in that arena thought that the streak was over at that point in time. And I didn't think that was possible for me to believe that Triple H had a chance. But Orton, you know, he had the Legend Killer gimmick. They were playing it up a little bit. And Taker seemed to kind of be a little bit on the downswing where you really thought they would kind of rehabilitate Orton, you know, after sort of that failed title run in 2004. You kind of thought maybe him winning at WrestleMania 21 would kind of get him back on track and put him as a big-time main event superstar that they thought. You know, he did become, but would really kind of catapult him again. So I would say Randy Orton was a really great opponent for The Undertaker.
His greatest?
Time. Greatest is tough, but I mean, I think the obvious answer is Shawn, just because of the two matches they had. But I do think a great honorable mention should be Orton, because I do really think the streak was in jeopardy at that match.
Yeah, I think the top three have to be Orton, Triple H, Shawn. I mean, I can't think of.
Well, what about Batista?
Yeah, that's my other.
Oh, that's a good one too. And Edge.
That's my other honorable mention.
Edge. I mean, yeah, that's.
That, you know, going back to miss. Sorry, Scott, I'll let you go to sectors.
No, go ahead.
Going back to the missed opportunities. How about that one? Ending Edge's undefeated streak the year before he faces Taker.
Yes, that's
yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, God, how do you not try your best to save that? You know, knowing you'll probably do that match eventually. That could have been such a huge thing, having the two undefeated guys go at it for the title.
Yeah, I concur with that. I concur with that.
All right, Scott, where are you going before
I was just going to say that again. If you read the WrestleMania 23 review, and of course we'll mention it way down the line, we get to that vault. I've always said I love that match more than I like Cena Shawn at WrestleMania 23. I love that Taker Batista match because, again, they went out there pissed off because they didn't understand why did they have to not have the main event. Their feud was just as important as Cena and Shawn's is, and I think they put on a better match. I'm not as big a fan of that Cena Shawn match as everybody else is. I like their match in London on Raw much better than the one at 23. But Batista kind of gave Taker a good. That was a great series of matches in 07 overall. But yeah, I didn't want to say Triple H because I don't want anybody, you know, but I am. But definitely for those that haven't watched him in a while, check out the match with Diesel at 12, and you'll. You know, for those that may, for any of you guys or any of our listeners that haven't watched it in a while, it's really not as bad as, I'd say bad, but it's better than you thought it was since the last time you may have watched it. I think you'll get a better appreciation for that match. Diesel deserves a lot of credit for that match. He made it better than I think people thought he would.
I can't believe we forgot Batista for that original first time through that list. I mean, yeah, that's a good one. And, yeah. And another time when it was definitely believable, and there were a lot of rumors that he was going to be the guy to beat it. And I remember there was a lot of backlash for it. All right, I guess we'll get to the big one, and then if anything comes out of there, we will we'll go there. But best WrestleMania performer, Jordan Duncan.
Well, I made a list of three. I'll go with my third is The Rock, and I left Steve Austin off my list. Might make an argument that Austin had better matches. I just personally like The Rock more. We talked earlier about switching things up with different scenarios with Rock and HBK. If we change Rock and HBK at 20, then we don't get to see Rock and Ric Flair interact. I think that might be my favorite part of WrestleMania 20 is when Rock and Ric Flair are in the ring together.
Yes.
It seems like Rock just – I'm a sucker for The Rock. Anytime he's out there, I'm going to be entertained. My second would be Undertaker. You know, Scott was talking about the Diesel match, and I think that was really his first good WrestleMania match. He had some real stinkers in there, and then he had some crap after that. But, you know, really, his last five, six have all been solid, good to great matches. And, of course, my top one has got to be Shawn Michaels, the Undertaker matches, the Razor Ramon, Chris Jericho. I mean, that's kind of obvious to me. It goes Michaels, Taker, Rock for me.
Nichols?
I've got one and then a pair. My first, the pair is Gorilla and Jesse. They made those first
ooh,
six.
So, outside the box.
You know, when you're watching a crappy one like Garvin and Bravo from five, it's Gorilla and Jesse are carrying you through this match. You know?
Yes, pretty much. Good way to
and
put
then
it.
My other one is Stone Cold. Just and for the variety of matches, you know, it's not just, you know, The Rock, but he had one, a different one with Brett. Then he had a different one with Shawn, and then Rock, and even Hall. He had a different one with Hall. So there were it was a variety. It was different. They were all very distinct, different matches. They weren't just wild brawls all over the place. So for me, those three guys are the best ones.
Greeny?
Number three, going to go with The Rock. Two, Austin, and one, Shawn. Shawn has just gotten better with every WrestleMania appearance that he's had. I think he's the greatest storyteller in the history of the business. And that's pretty much it.
I think I'm gonna go a different route because I think Shawn to me is a number one. Two guys that I think could have been on this list if they had a little bit longer of a run or more matches to showcase it in. One would be Brett. I feel like we keep mentioning matches that he was in, but I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. The other would be we just had this debate in the message board, but the Ultimate Warrior, who
stole my thunder. That's what I was going
to
say.
Who had those 3 years of really, you know, built to great matches. The Rude match was very good. Then the Hogan match, obviously, was excellent. And then the Savage match was an all-timer. So, you know, he didn't have many WrestleMania matches, but the ones he had were really memorable.
Ugh, you killed me. I was going to take Warrior. Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You know, he might have been a flake. At least he understood, and you and I talked about this, JR, on our 15 vault last night, about guys who got it in the ring but didn't understand it outside of the ring, and we talked about it with Sable. Warrior was the same way. Warrior understood what needed to get a big match done. The problem was is he couldn't put that away when he was out in the real world. He thought his entire life was WrestleMania 6. That was his problem. But yeah, when he was ready for the big stage, he knew how to perform, and he did it 3 straight shows: Rude, Hogan, and Savage. And even to a certain extent, the match with Hercules is not horrendous. And the one at Triple H we don't talk about, but you seriously don't even if it's not Triple H, nobody talks about that match anyway. So it doesn't matter if it was Triple H or not. Those matches. I mean, JR is right. I mean, when the lights shined brightest, he did deliver. Even if he was eventually a raving lunatic. After that, I'd have to say Austin, because he's another guy who just knew what a main event meant. And I gotta tie at the top. It's a little different than our performer list. I've kind of changed my mind as we've been talking tonight, and this has been a great discussion, guys. Because it's two different definitions. I'm gonna think outside the box, I think it was you, Jeremy. Was it you, Jeremy, or was it Greeny that said Jesse and Gorilla? I think it was you, Jeremy, right?
Yes.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, you said you. I'm going to think outside the box, too. Sean, in terms of pure wrestling, is the best WrestleMania performer of all time if you're talking about pure wrestling. But I think even though the guy's a bona fide pathological liar at this stage of his life, I think Hogan deserves a lot of credit for being a pure performer on the biggest stage. He got us all to watch it. He got us all to buy it. As much as he had 7 moves and he spent more of the aftermatch posing than the match itself, I think Hogan deserves much more credit for those early WrestleManias, putting them over and getting the product hot. Now, you can give Vince more as much credit for that and the booking in general and his opponents, Andre, Savage. But I think Hogan deserves a little piece of the pie for being one of the greatest performers of that first 8 WrestleManias. Even if all the matches weren't stellar, he deserves a little piece for being. But Sean, in terms of just the entire package, I don't think you can deny that Sean is the greatest on the biggest stage, win or lose.
All right, here's one for you.
I think that makes it better that even he's great in the matches he loses.
Here's one for you that, you know, a guy you think of as a great wrestler of all time, but not really as a WrestleMania performer. I'm kind of just, you know, flipping through the matches in my head. What about Chris Benoit? A very good triple threat match at 16, an awesome match with Kurt Angle at 17, missed 18, a very good tag match at 19, of course an all-timer at 20, one of the greatest Money in the Bank performances ever in 21 with the selling of the arm, 22, the match with JBL is pretty good, 23, really carried MVP and put him on the map, and man, he had a really good run.
He did. You know, JR, you kind of stepped over what I was going to say, too, is what about Angle himself?
Yes.
You know, Eddie, Lesnar, Michael, Benoit, Jericho, even the Kane match was not bad. They had a better match on, I think it was SmackDown, but not bad. And then there was another match he had, too. The three-way with Ray and Orton was, that was probably his worst one, but he never had a bad match, I don't think, at Mania.
No, definitely not. I think it's a good one, too. I think he definitely belongs on the list.
Mm-hmm. Angle went into that match. The thing that hurts that match is that he goes into that match kind of angry because he knew he was going to lose, knowing he wasn't going to. He was mad that whole reign, knowing that he was a holdover, you know, and I think that kind of affected the match a little bit.
And that's when stuff was really building with him physically and mentally and the drugs and all that stuff, the, mm-hmm. you know, painkiller. I think that's when he was really starting to kind of get mired in all that, was around that time. All right, let's turn it quick. Let's go to your favorite. All right, let's do two ways. Well, we don't have to do best WrestleMania match because we're doing that on the message board right now. Let's do your favorite WrestleMania match. So it doesn't have to be the greatest match. We're not going to get on you about quality. You know, well, what is your, if you had to pick three WrestleMania matches to bring with you to eternity, what are they going to be? We'll start with Chad. What three would you take with you?
Well, once again, King Kong Bundy, the little token.
brother.
If talking about favorite match, I would start with Warrior versus Savage from WrestleMania 7. I think that's to me as close as wrestling can ever get to a morality play. Just awesome, awesome storytelling. Probably my favorite story match of all time. Another one would be WrestleMania 8, Savage versus Flair. It's right up there. Great story. Flair bleeding all over the place. Him hitting on Liz and Savage freaking out. The great promo in the back, if I can include that as I take it to eternity, I'd include that where, the Bobby's wailing away on that phone they had in the backstage area. So I really love that one too for a storyline and from really execution perspective. And my third would be Owen versus Brett. I think that's the perfect opener. I think that's probably my favorite Vince McMahon called match. There's a moment, it's right at the very beginning when they first lock up and kind of Owen shrugs away and then kind of thrusts both his hands in the air, you know, like he really wanted an accomplishment. And I love the King on commentary because he squeals, "Oh yeah!" And you know, Vince is also on commentary. Vince is on commentary like, "What is that? Some type of victory? Give me a break!" I mean, it's just a great moment, and they really tell an amazing story, and that's my favorite opener of all time. So those are probably my three favorite Mania matches. Those are not necessarily the ones I'm voting for in the tournament, because I don't think those are the three best, but I think those are our three great matches, and those are my favorites.
Jeremy?
My number three would be Mach and Hogan from WrestleMania 5. And I can remember watching it the first time and going, Hogan's going to win. But I watch it, and I always have watched it from the side of, you know, I'm on Macho Man's side. And I like watching him try to take Hogan down. You know, I know he's going to lose, but I just like – and I thought it was a good match. I thought that they really did – you know, for a card that wasn't that great, you know, they really did something good, you know, in the main event. And then Mach having his elbow all taped up, and that kind of adds to it. Brett and Austin, just because of how ferocious they were going at each other. You know, I mean, I thought, as a kid, I didn't know until about 98 that it was fake. I didn't find out for a long time. So I thought these two guys were really going at it, you know. And the intensity that they went back and forth, and then at Mania, just to blow it off the way they did, it was perfect. You couldn't ask for a better blow-off match to a hot feud than that one. And then number one would be HBK and Kurt Angle. I'm not the biggest HBK fan, but when I think of wrestling and I want to show someone, like someone goes, "Well, why do you like wrestling?" I show them that match. You put anyone in front of that match and dare them to tell you that it's not good and it's not emotional, and it, you know, if that doesn't give them a hook, nothing will to me. You know,
I agree. I think you put it perfectly when you say that. That is one match you can show to anyone to say this is what, you know, wrestling can be. Jason, what do you think?
Number three might surprise a lot of people, but I'm going to say Demolition versus the Colossal Connection from 6. First, the pop that Demolition gets when they win the belts back is one of the top five pops you will ever hear at a WrestleMania. And then also Andre turning on Bobby, or Bobby turning on Andre, and then Andre turning face again. Just a great moment, and it's Andre's, he was at 7, but it was his last in-ring performance at WrestleMania, and I thought it was just perfect for him. Number two, Brett and Owen from 10. The perfect opening match, and obviously with me, number one, Savage and Warrior from 7. They told the perfect story, and if you do not get choked up every time you see Savage and Elizabeth after the match, then you're not a wrestling fan, and you don't understand wrestling at all.
Jordan?
I got three, and I picked three for different reasons. But to add to what Jason just said about the the Colossal Connection. I love when Andre gets in the ring and rides it back by himself. And he's just waving it. He and Haku, like, you guys can walk in the back. I love that part.
That is awesome. I love that, too.
Warrior and Savage is the obvious one. I think, like Jason said, that's pro wrestling. You know, with everything that happens afterwards, you know, Sherry's just kicking the Macho Man, and Elizabeth in that hideous sweater comes running to save him, and it's just a perfect wrestling story. For me, and I just mentioned a couple minutes ago, Rock and Sock versus Evolution is just one of the funnest matches I've ever seen, and it just made me want to watch The Rock versus Ric Flair. But it's WrestleMania, too. It's got all these stars facing off, just awesome moments, stuff like that. And the other one, I just tried to come up with something different than other has said, is the TLC match from WrestleMania 17. It's just guys getting their first big major shot at WrestleMania and just going insane. Just an awesome match. So just wanted to pick something a little different that time.
All right, so for mine, I'm going to go with the Demolition Colossal Connection as my third. I'm with Jason. That's one of my favorite Mania matches of all time, one of the first ones I saw. And the whole moment is just so amazing. Number two, and I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard many recent ones. I don't know if nostalgia feels that way or if the matches are just more memorable in the early years. Number two to me is the triple threat at WrestleMania 20. We were there live in the building, and the atmosphere, and everyone was chanting tap when he had the crossface on, and that moment of, oh, God, when, you know, Benoit turned around and Triple H is standing behind him, and you're just waiting for that pedigree. Just a great payoff to Triple H's year-long domination. That run where everyone just wanted him to lose, and then Benoit finally does it and breaks through that glass ceiling. To me, that was number two on my list. And number one is Savage Flair from 8. I just love that whole story. I love the whole package, the interviews, like Chad said, the match itself. To me, just a perfect WrestleMania moment. So, Scott, why don't you wrap us up with your three?
Okay. I'm going to have a couple of recents and then a very old school, one that we haven't talked about at all, because really none of our questions have kind of steered toward that match. Number three for me is Taker and Triple H from last year in the Cell. You couldn't ask for three better guys total that can build to something that special. Is it better than the one from the year before? I guess that all depends on your whoever's point of view. But the story being told in that match and the moment when Sean super kicked him, I go, holy fucking shit. These guys actually are going to – and then he kicked out. I'm like, all right, it's not going to happen. But the story still was still great to be told, and I still enjoyed it. And I it's definitely one of my favorites. Number two, JR just mentioned it, WrestleMania 20, because him and I were standing right next to each other. And it's the only time – well, not the only time, but one of the few times in my life that I did not want to see Triple H win. And when he got up, he's half stumbling, and we look at each other and go, oh, fuck, I'm going to get crushed for this. And then Benoit did an awesome reversal and tapped out. The moment was amazing. JR and I high-fiving guys we didn't know, and it was incredible. The other great moment about that show was during the Brock Goldberg match. JR, if you remember that one section over those two guys dressed as the Mega Powers, it was just as much of a highlight as the freaking Goldberg Brock match. And my number one match that I would take to eternity and I would clutch it forever, and that's obviously Savage Steamboat from WrestleMania 3. Still the perfect match of anything.
Kind of crazy that I mean you're the only one who said it.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
Probably because I'm the only one at this in this round table that was alive enough to remember. That was alive to remember it. So, but that was what I was saying, because a lot of our topics tonight really didn't skew towards that match. It's not underrated. Yeah. It's not overrated. Right. It's not disappointing. You know,
still, you'd think it would be in the top three. I mean, it's generally considered the best match of all time, but maybe just not at least the favorite.
At least everybody had except for me. Well, me. I guess everybody had a Savage in there.
Yeah.
There's a guy. Is he one of the greatest WrestleMania performers of all time?
Absolutely. He has three great performances. WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 5, WrestleMania 7, WrestleMania 8. He actually has four.
Mm-hmm.
I would say great performances. Minus the Steel debacle at WrestleMania 2. Everything else that he was involved in with Mania was really fun.
Yep. Even WrestleMania 6, as I mentioned, in its own special way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Kind of the Sandy Koufax, maybe, of WrestleMania performers. A guy that had an awesome peak, just wasn't around long enough to pad it, and a guy that never came back like Hogan did to add those extra couple matches on to really set himself apart. But he had so many great emotional matches and feuds and storylines. He obviously belongs on the list. So before we wrap up, anyone have any other topics they wanted to get into or any other thoughts, just WrestleMania in general, old school?
I have a question.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking, we started the show with our first Mania, and it was either 2 or 8 for all of us. When was the first time we all saw WrestleMania 1? For me, it wasn't until probably like 2002 or 2003 before I finally saw the first WrestleMania.
As soon as I got into it, I went to the video store, and I call it, it may sound dumb, but I call it homework. I rented every single tape they had, and that was in 92, and I rented everything and wore out all their tapes. Like, I remember WrestleMania 4, and I don't know if this was the same for you guys, wherever you're at, but the box on the shelf, it opened, and when it opened, a large cardboard cutout of Hogan's head popped up. It was really weird. When you opened it, Hogan's head came up and looked at you, and he's doing the growl, you know, and I always thought that was the coolest box in the world. And when you folded it, Hogan went right down between the two tapes, and it sandwiched back together.
Yep, I remember that.
That was great. But yeah, I saw all the old ones right then and there. As soon as I got hooked, that was it. I watched all of them.
When I got into it, our video store, for some reason, never had the first WrestleMania, never had WrestleMania 3, which we had on tape ourselves, but the first 3 WrestleManias, our video stores never carried.
These questions just sets myself up for more old fodder, but I rented it like 3 weeks after it, like a month after it actually happened. So I first watched it like in May of 1985.
You watched it on a Nickelodeon, yes.
I did, right after Mr. Wizard's World. I put that on, yeah, so.
Oh, God, sorry, Scott.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I watched it like almost a month after it came out.
I think I watched it, it was within that first year I started watching in 1990. My cousin Matt would rent them and dub them. So a lot of my collection is dubbed from video stores that he did. So I think I saw the original copy of WrestleMania 1 on VHS that he dubbed for me back in like 1990. So, yeah, I would say it was in that first year I saw it.
I saw it about a year after Scott saw it for the first time, which was like May of 86, right after WrestleMania 2. They finally got it in the video store where we used to go to. And then I actually watched WrestleMania 2 when it came out on VHS not too long after that.
My video store only had 3 wrestling tapes when I first started going there. I did it again. WrestleMania 1.
What do they have on Betamax, though?
Betamax, well, the sad thing is, that's the VHS, that's the VCR I had, was a Betamax. So my father, love him to death, God rest your soul, but he was the one who went with the, it is a much more better quality. Yeah, Dad, but for every one beta, there's 39 VHS, so.
Did he also buy an HD DVD instead of a Blu-ray?
HD DVD. Laserdisc. I remember the first three tapes I rented, and this is another story. This obviously goes out to another topic. You know, we could have another roundtable about WrestleMania 1, the best of the WWF Volume 6, and the best of the Intercontinental title. That first one that came out like in, I don't know, 84. I think it had a couple of the really good Morales Morocco matches on it. So there wasn't much pickings for wrestling tapes at my box office in the Post Road. But, WrestleMania 1, fortunately, was one of them. So
I remember being so pissed when I rented, I think it was the first Hulkamania tape. It was, like, only an hour, and I felt, like, robbed.
Yeah. Good matches on it, though. That tape's got a great Hogan stud cage match from St. Louis that's really good. There's I think the other one's Hogan, and I think it's Greg the Hammer from Philly. Because I always remember him getting slammed off the top rope and landing on the Spectrum sign on the canvas. And then there's that clip, that infamous him and Mean Gene, they're making the protein power shake, and he's throwing all this, and Hogan pulls out this bag of like 50 pills, and I'm like, and you look ahead 20 years later, you're like, is that really a good thing to do? This is power protein, and he pulls out like a bag of like 50 pills. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
I think they got that segment from TNT.
Yeah, it's just like, it's the strangest thing. Hogan pulls out this bag of capsules. You're like, what? This is so bizarre.
All right, let's wrap with this. Let's all go, just take a minute. What do you honestly think at the end of the day, on April 7th, we'll be sitting here saying on the next headline show, Chad, Scott, take out the fact that we're going to be there live, Greeny. What do you honestly think? Where will this show rank? Where will it hang? Is it as bad as everyone's predicting it to be? Will it surprise everyone because expectations are low? What do you honestly expect from this show, Jordan?
I think it all hinges on if they go ahead with the rumor of Cena turning heel. If Cena goes heel, then it's going to go down as one of the most memorable moments, I think, in history. If it doesn't, I think it'll. I don't think it's going to be a bad show. I think one of the best things they have going for their product right now is they have such good workers that they're never really going to deliver a bad show anymore. But it could just be a forgettable show. I think it all hinges on the Brock match and how Cena and Rock ends. If Cena and Rock ends with Cena turning heel, I think it could be a big deal.
Jeremy?
I think if, and I'll agree with him, if Cena turns heel, but in the grand scope of the whole thing, I think they need to get away from the predictability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to happen. And that is how far down I am with the negativity. I don't believe it's going to happen, but that's what I want to happen. They need to take everything that people are going to sit there and say, you know, Triple H is going to win. He needs to lose. Obviously, Undertaker's going to win. He needs to lose. Cena needs to turn heel, and nobody thinks it's going to happen. To me, if that happens, if they get rid of all the predictability, just, you know, no one thought Punk was going to be champion for a year. Not a one of you could have sat there and said, yeah, he'll hold it for a year. No, no one ever did, but he did, and that's good, and that made me happy. If they can get rid of all the predictability, it'll be one of the best WrestleManias we could ever hope for. And I say that because, for me, 23 through 28 they all kind of blend together.
Yeah,
no, I don't remember really anything that's special that's happened. Yeah, there's been good matches, but nothing like 7, you know, or 8 even. So if they get rid of all the predictability and they go the total opposite direction of what we don't expect to happen, it'll be outstanding. But if they don't, it's just going to be another one that I sit there and go, well, I remember it for a few months. And after a while, I won't even remember the undercard. I don't remember the undercard last year, and that's horrible. But I can tell you most of the matches from WrestleMania 2, you know.
It's true.
Greeny?
I think as far as crowds go, it's going to be one of the best of all time. And I also think Cena will turn heel. The heel turn will involve the Shield and will also involve another person who, for people who haven't read the SmackDown spoilers, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's also going to involve somebody who will return to WWE TV this Friday on SmackDown.
Hmm. I know who you're talking about, but I didn't think of him being involved.
Hey, can I spoil something real quick?
Yeah, why not?
The Heat streak has ended tonight.
Yes, it has.
The Chicago Bulls have defeated the Miami Heat.
And also, sadly, the NIT run of the Providence Friars went down, but they gave it a hard-fought battle. I, you know, they played late Monday night, having to fly down to Texas 2 days later and play. They gave them a game. It really didn't.
What was the final?
They lost by, I think, 8, but Baylor pulled away the last, like, 2.5 minutes. But until then, they really battled them. So proud of that effort. They really stepped up and had a good game. Chad, what do you think for Mania?
I mean, I honestly, I think we'll basically kind of remember this as a good show. In ring wise with a hot crowd, but I really don't have faith that they will turn Cena heel, or that, you know, something memorable like us witnessing Triple H's last match will happen. I don't think either of those things will happen, honestly. So I think it'll just be Cena regains his title, gets the handshake from The Rock at the end, and then we'll see where they go from there.
Chad, I think we're brothers.
You know, I want to believe that Triple H could maybe lose, but they just haven't put enough behind. You know, when Shawn was heading into 26, there were so many retrospectives, and we haven't gotten any of that with Triple H, you know, so I just feel like there's no way they're just going to have him lose and go out like that. Now, you know, I have seen it said that it's almost more of an ego stroke for him to lose and get the pomp and circumstance in New York and all that stuff with Bruno being there, you know, almost would be a huge spot for him to retire and put the spotlight on himself. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a better show than expected. I think when expectations are this low, it'll tend to deliver more than expected. I think it's the opposite of 26, where the expectations are so high it could never meet them. I think with everyone really expecting a bad show, I think there'll be a lot of pleasantly surprised fans. I also think there'll be a lot of people that make it a self-fulfilling prophecy that want it to suck so bad that no matter what happens, they're going to bitch about it. And, you know, those people are out there. And I don't think any are on this call right now, but I do think there are people out there that will look at it that way. I think it'll be a good show. I think Punk and Taker are going to deliver no matter, you know. It's just one of those things. Until they're proven wrong, I go with it. So until Taker shows me he's not going to deliver a great match, then I'm going to assume he's going to deliver a great match. I mean, he's on a streak now of what? I mean, I'm not just winning streak of great matches since 23, right?
Yeah,
since the Henry match at 22. That was his last kind of stinker.
Yeah, and I mean, since then, he's put on great matches. And you could say it's due to the performer, but Punk is up there too with Triple H and Shawn on the level of performer. So I think the possibility is there. And I think a lot of it hinges on, yes, the Cena heel turn, and yes, Brock and Triple H, how that plays out. You know, I didn't believe that the Cena heel turn could happen until this past Monday when they seemed to sow a lot of seeds for it, the way he's getting frustrated. And now they said Rock has already signed on for Extreme Rules. Him and Brock are definitely going to be on that show. So what is stopping them from really going crazy, having Cena? You can go one of two ways. Either Cena turns heel, wins the match, and they face one more time in Extreme Rules. Or Cena loses, snaps the next night on Raw, turns heel, and they fight at Extreme Rules, and that's where Cena finally wins the title. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of those two things happen with Rock already locked in for that show.
Did any of you guys read the John Report at all? Anyone?
I follow him like on Twitter and Facebook, but I don't read.
He
all
brought
the
up that last Monday night, Cena said when asked why he needs to beat The Rock, he said, "I need to beat you. I just need to beat you." Austin said the same thing to The Rock before WrestleMania.
Yep.
Yeah.
And more than and anything Rock you could ever imagine.
Right, and Austin went heel. Now, the fanboy in me, once I would totally be on jump on the scene of the bandwagon if that's where he goes. That's the perfect setup. I mean, it's absolutely perfect against The Rock, no less. My God, you said the exact same thing. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it happens. But, you know, the John Report, they brought that up, and I said, oh, my God, that would be amazing if it happens.
Yeah.
And I hope it does. I really do.
I mean, it is the perfect setup for the Shield to get involved there and pay that off. yeah, I agree, Jeremy. I think that's the way to go, whether you do it that at the show or you do it the next night on Raw where he snaps and joins them or whatever else. I think it has to happen. I think this is the perfect time. You're not going to get a better time to do it. So that's my thought. Scott, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think a lot of my personal feelings about that whole weekend, I'm not letting the show itself envelop me because I'm getting so excited for the Hall of Fame and that moment at the Garden. I'm going into WrestleMania completely with a blank slate and just wanting a good show. I just hope that if Cena does win and it's bland and normal and dull, that it doesn't soil for me the rest of the show. We're going to get boos. You guys will, all of us, whether you're home or you're with us, we're going to boo anyway. I just hope that the rest of the show is good enough that Cena winning a bland, dull, predictable title match doesn't ruin the rest of the card. I don't need Punk to break the streak. Do I think he will? Find out next week. But I just want another great match. And, yeah, I'm being a little selfish, and I said this to JR about Brock and Triple H. And I'll tip my hat right now on that. I want Triple H to lose because I'm selfish, and I want to be in the building for his last match,
and then take him home that night and make him feel better.
and then maybe it'll go up to 7 inches. No, but I'm just being selfish because I want to be there in the building for his last match. But I agree with JR that you've said a lot that he's going to be like Vince and he'll pop in and out, so he probably will never really retire. But I just want good matches. I don't need crazy, you know, nutso Hogan Bash at the Beach unpredictability. If it happens, great. I just want to walk out of MetLife that night going, that's pretty good. That's all I want to do. I just want to walk out knowing that it was worth the money.
All right. And with that, we're going to wrap up. I think this was a great show. I think everyone did a great job. I thank you all for being prepared. I thought that was awesome that we weren't sitting here just humming and hawing back and forth. I thought it was awesome you guys all made lists and we're ready to go. So I thank you for your participation, and we're going to wrap things up for the show. So for Jeremy Nichols, Jason Greenhouse, Chad Campbell, Jordan Duncan, thank you all for joining us. Scott, we'll be back Monday night. Big show, because we just locked in a little boost to it. We're going to interview Joe Dombrowski, the creator of the Montreal Theory DVD. He'll be at WrestleCon selling that, and the booker and promoter of Prime Wrestling. Ironically and coincidentally enough, Kevin Kelly was a big part of that documentary. He was in there.
And
we just happened to have Kevin Kelly scheduled to come on after Joe to talk Ring of Honor. So I talked to Kevin today, and he would love to come on and talk about the Montreal Theory DVD with Joe. So Kevin will be with us for the whole show Monday night. He's going to join us to talk to Joe, and then when Joe leaves, we're going to talk a little Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor. So get your questions in for Kevin about that show if you're interested in Ring of Honor at all. Wednesday night, it'll just be Scott and I. We'll be doing the WrestleMania headlines going into the show, all our predictions and thoughts, talk about the weekend to come. Jordan, you're going to join us with a half-baked ideas?
Actually, Wednesday, I'm going to be in Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, you are not fun.
But Andrew Reich did give me a half-baked idea, so get in touch with him. He's got one.
He wanted you to do it, so I'm going to have to go back to him. All right, we'll get Reich on.
He can condense it to about 3 to 4 hours.
So. we'll try.
Yeah, no,
I'm just going to set up the mic and let him talk for 8 hours, and I'll pick the best 20 minutes of it. So, all right. Well, there's your Wednesday. Hopefully, we'll have some half-baked idea from somebody. And then that's it. Then it's WrestleMania. So if you're interested, if you're attending Mania, once again, please hit us up on Facebook. We have a group with the whole full schedule. Scott and I will go over that in more detail next Wednesday for the final blast there. If you are coming to the tailgate, we are collecting now for the food and drink. So get in touch with me. We'll get you set up for that. Going to be a lot of fun. And then that's it. It's here. We're 1 week through our 2 week WrestleMania build, Scott. Can't believe it.
It's been outstanding. We had a great show last night. Great vault. Guys, you were awesome tonight. And we got another great week ahead. So it's coming around the corner very quickly.
All right, let's wrap up. That's the crew. That's Scott. I'm Jarrah. We'll talk to you Monday night with Joe and Kevin. Take care, everyone. What
the fuck? I don't know. Just end it. Just hit stop. Well, it's too late now. Fuck it. I quit. Goodbye.
Oh, that was awesome. Is that like the Mabel noise when it drops the big splash?
The battery hitting the back of his head. Oscar, hear ye, hear ye. I wanted to do one thing and one thing only, and that's to be a law enforcement officer. Treat other people like you'd want to be treated. Try to walk the straight and narrow, because that's the only way you're going to survive in this life. Who will survive?
Execution is on top. There's a new gun in town. I made a vow to become a law enforcement officer. See these handcuffs right here? They're an instrument of justice. The big boss man is law, order, and justice of the World Wrestling Federation. Who will survive? Tip for the top, we won't be stopped. When no one improved and got the grip.